Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee. Have an awesome show, so we are going to get through the preliminaries very quickly here. Excited because you know him as the man god. Shane Bettenhausen's here from Ignition Entertainment.
There you go. Thanks. This clap is for you, sir.
Thanks for having me back, guys. It's been 2 whole months, I think.
Too long. Is what
way too long for a guy who lives in Los Angeles, but you wouldn't have to wait too long because the big show also coming up live at Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle. Saturday night, if you're going to Penny Arcade, 8 to 9 p.m., set it on your calendars now. And Shane says there's a 90% chance.
99.
I was giving you a 10% rule.
I mean, I said I have a 99% chance I can come by drunkenly and like mess it up. But if you actually have a microphone for me,
There will be a microphone for you, of course. There will be a microphone for you. There will be a microphone for lots of folks. The lineup is already looking absolutely epic for that. It could be the four of us already.
I'm happy to be in the audience.
Plus Jeff Green, which is awesome.
My dad, Black Dragon, is that what they called him? Black Dragon?
Black Adder.
No, he was a dragon, wasn't he?
I think he was Black. I always confuse it over to Black Adder. Anyway, there you go. Jeff Green will be there as well. We're looking to have Luke Smith on the program. So
and a little John Davison, too,
little
right?
John Davison's going to be up.
David Ellis has Halo stuff to do.
He has more important stuff.
I was talking
to him yesterday on the Ames, and he was like, I have other stuff to do.
Yeah, even his festivals.
Speaking of the rest of the four of us, to my left is Mr. Jeff Cannata.
What's up? Of course, that's with 2 N's, 1 T, and I'm happy to be here today. I appreciate you guys waiting for me. I was late. I'm sorry.
You were late.
You were fashionably late.
You had an audition.
We're not actually recording. We already did the show. This is just for me.
You guys are humoring me. Yes. That's adorable.
You're trying to be an actor. Thespian.
Yes.
We'd love to see you do Master Thespian. Can you do Master?
Acting.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then across from me is Mr. Zav D'Amatos.
Hey, thanks for having me. Also, Garnet, I'm like everyone in this room and everyone listening, I'm really hoping that you managed to take your blood pressure medication this morning.
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
And it will be boiling over later because I do feel like I need to revisit the Diablo 3 discussion. Just a scotch. Just a little bit. We'll do that in the warning as well as talk about the handheld thing that we did not get to because I know you guys are very eager to that. We have a lot of comments on that. That will be a big part of it. Zav has a fat stack of news, of course. And we got games, including El Shaddai.
El Shaddai, El Shaddai, El Hamkana Adonai, we will praise and lift you high.
We needed that much of it too. To make the play.
I know, right? I was hoping it would go El Shaddai.
I just wanted the whole song to finish playing. Right. That would have been great.
Yeah,
no, that's the first time you've heard that, right?
No, it's not.
Wait, is that the theme song from your game?
It is not. The song is really popular, though. So if you do search for El Shaddai on Google, that comes up prominently.
1,700,000 views on the YouTube of Amy Grant's El Shaddai.
Well, yeah. So, a lot of people do have that association with the name and at least know the connotation of it. Whereas some people are like, what does El Shaddai mean?
So, I think that's really a funny point is that a lot of people did say, like, what the heck is El Shaddai? So now, like, the first times that we were showing the game, obviously, you guys didn't want to tip your hand too much, as no developer wants to. Now that it is releasing next week, what the hell is this game about?
Are you jumping into what you will be playing this weekend?
What you will be playing this weekend.
So, yeah.
It's an Amy Grant simulation game.
Well, so El Shaddai means Almighty God in ancient Hebrew. All right, so that's what the title actually means.
Heavy
stuff. And what the game is an action-adventure game made in Japan by a team led by the guy who did Okami, named Sawaki Takayasu, and a bunch of the guys who were on Clover Studios, who worked on Beautiful Joe and those other games, and some other people kind of came together to make this new team to make this game based on the Book of Enoch, which is part of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And you've probably heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that's like this. Garnet's kind of giving me this blank look.
No, I'm listening. I'm just.
Yeah, and so what those are.
I'm trying to be respectful because it's like.
It sounds like this game was put together by a marketing team.
If there's one thing kids are into, it's ancient biblical apocrypha. Like all the kids are like, man, I want to learn more about.
Talk about pandering to an audience.
So what is the name of that religion that Madonna got into?
Kabbalah. There is some relation there. So anyway, the Book of Enoch, what it is an alternate version of the Old Testament that was written, thousands of years ago that. Was very different than the Old Testament that you and I were taught in Bible school or Sunday school. And
is it one of those books that has like choose your own adventure? Is that how that works?
No, it's not that. Nor it's not on Mad Libs either. But yeah, so it's this different story, and it's at some point people were like, "This is not the story that is going to be the canon of the Bible." And these chapters got buried away and forgotten about, and instead we have the Bible that we have now. And it's interesting as you play through this game. To see how different it is than the Old Testament that you know. And it's pretty different. Like, it starts the same, but it diverges. And then the fact that we gave that story to this really creative artist in Japan and said, hey, feel free to adapt this and make it modern and make it something that will appeal to Japanese people and to Western people. So it isn't exactly word for word. If you try to read the Book of Enoch, we've obviously taken some liberties with it. But the overall storyline does tell the story. And, we thought there have been so many games based on other mythologies, whether it's Greek, Roman, right. Norse, Japanese. And, why should Christian mythology, Western mythology be off limits?
I think that's a great point. Although I think there's also a great deal of sensitivity in the Judeo-Christian world to, the sanctity of the religion.
That's true. And that's partially why we haven't really been focusing on the religious aspects of the game
sure.
when talking about the PR and marketing. Because, I think the core group who is going to find this game and originally are going to be the hardcore gamers who have played things like Devil May Cry and Bayonetta. Because the game is very similar to those games, when you first pick it up. I mean, when you play through it, it actually goes all sorts of crazy directions. But
I mean, the 3D parts, because like I've played right. two parts of it. One part it was 3D, and the other part was this very cool 2D like window stained glass.
Right. And then the 3D parts are control, a lot like DMC and Bayonetta. So if you're good at those games, you can just jump into this and be parrying and counterattacking and doing air combos and know how to play the game. But if you're someone who doesn't play action games on easy mode, the game is actually really quite easy. And we wanted anybody to be able to play through it just to enjoy the story and the graphics and the music.
Cool.
But yeah, so it's been a this game has been a real journey of discovery for me and for everyone at Ignition and for the development team, because it is a weird looking game, and it's a game based on weird stuff. And
you say weird looking, but it looks awesome.
I
saw it at PAX East, and I don't know how old that build was back then. What difficulty mode were you showing off when you were at PAX? Do you remember?
That was probably normal, which is a little tough. But yeah, so the art,
it was pretty tough.
You should say that.
Yeah, normal is tough. Like normal is challenging. And
because I remember, Justin, our friend Justin, was still with you guys at TGS last year, and I'm trying to play the game, and he's like, dude, don't worry. It's okay. It's like, it's okay that you're not doing that great. It's hard.
Right.
And I'm like, you're just making me feel good.
Yeah,
it's like, it's hard.
And like the demo, the trial that's been up on XBLA and PSN for, 2 months now, that's from like the third level of the game. So by that point, you've usually actually kind of mastered the melee combat. And it's, if you just jump into it not knowing what you're doing, it is kind of tough.
Tough thing about trying to put together a
But
demo.
In terms of the art, so, Sawaki was this great artist, and we loved what he did with Okami, and that game was very surreal and kind of looked like these animated Sumiye woodblock prints. Right. So for this game, we're like, well, since no one actually knows what, ancient biblical times looked like, it's open for interpretation. And it's allegory anyway, so just like do what you think is interesting and what has appealed to you. So he actually crafted a unique art style for every level, and none of the levels share any assets. So it was a ton of work. And each of the levels, the basic premise is you're tasked by God to go down and find these seven fallen angels who have kind of become corrupted and are, trying to... They built the Tower of Babel, and the humans on Earth are worshiping them instead of God. And the fallen angels have started to copulate with the people, and the unholy offspring of a human and an angel is this thing called a Nephilim, and these Nephilim are taking over the world. So God is going to send the Great Flood down to like reset the Earth. But before that can happen, they send Enoch down, who's a human who in the Book of Genesis gets invited to work in heaven and never dies. And he is the great-grandfather of Noah. Anyway, so they send Enoch down to Earth to find those fallen angels and bring them back to justice. So it's kind of it's a good premise for a quest. You have like these seven bad guys you have to go find, and they're hidden in this Tower of Babel. And inside that tower, each of them has crafted a kind of a new universe.
Okay, you know what? Actually, I'm going to say this. That is actually an awesome premise for a quest. And the fact that we've been hands off on Judeo-Christian traditions before. Like, this gives me sign of a new wonder. Like, what else could you do that's really, that's pretty freaking awesome sounding.
And as I'm playing through it, there's things like, so this character shows up from Babylonian mythology, this Babylonian goddess. And I was like, oh, man, what happened here? Did Sawaki just add this person, not knowing that she's not from the Bible. And then right. turns out in the Book of Enoch, no, it actually, she is in it. And like the Book of Enoch was aware of Babylonian pantheon of gods and goddesses. That's part of why it got deleted from the Bible. So uh-huh. this is actually kind of cross-cultural, cross-religious.
Wow.
And yeah, like before, you know, I was always interested in comparative religion and mythology, but yeah. getting into this game, like the rabbit hole goes so deep. And I'm interested in it now. And like a lot of people, all the fans who come up to us, like, yeah, this is actually has me interested in learning about where the Bible came from and why the Bible we have is the Bible we have.
Well, dude, just the story alone that you just recanted to me is like, it already ratcheted me up another notch because okay. I'm like, that's
recounted,
really.
But then recanted.
On the other side.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He didn't take it back. Yeah.
But I'll say on the other side, because we gave Sawaki so much freedom to change it, like there are things about it that are very fanciful that hardcore, hardline Christians may take offense at. Like, for example, the character of Lucifer in our game. He's Lucifer before he falls. And he's like your helper and he guides you through your quest. And because he has foreknowledge of the future, he has been to the future and he likes the future. So he bought a cell phone and brought it back. And that's how he calls God. So
what?
Yeah, so when you need
direct from the Sea Scrolls, wait, dude.
Is
right. all in there.
So is God's number one?
Exactly. So like, yeah, when you need to save your game, he calls up God and calls him on a cell phone. And it's funny and clever and cute, and I'm not offended by it, and most people aren't offended by it. But you know, if you're really a hardline, like I have no.
So is it a burner? Is he on contract?
Well, and it's funny. There's spoilers. There's a level in hell, and in hell he gets really bad reception.
Wait, do they serve AT&T in hell?
Yes, yes they do.
Yes they do, ladies and gentlemen.
So I mean, yeah, and this game it's a mouthful to explain. The title itself is long and kind of cumbersome. So yeah, there's so much messaging to try to get people to know what they're getting into. But like, I think you know, if you just dive into this game, not really even knowing what you're getting into, it is such a crazy journey that's always changing, and it's. You know, it's a real trip, and it's a long game. It takes about 13 hours to play through.
Oh, good God, for an action game?
Yeah, and wow. it's but you know, and it keeps changing. Like as you said, like some of the levels are 2D, and the second half of the game is much more weighted to be the kind of side-scrolling New Super Mario Brothers style. So wow. I think that's going to be a surprise to a lot of people too. So
I'm glad that you explained what it was because I tend to focus on playing the games that have stories that are focused on story, and you know, playing the game I thought it was really interesting, but it would have been one of those games that I would have left by the wayside, like mm-hmm. it would have just passed by. But actually, it sounds really interesting. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, and we're stoked because the reviews are starting to come in now, and you know. It's always kind of like I never know what someone's going to think when they see this game because you're either open to it or you're kind of scared of it. And like a lot of the reviewers really have gotten into it and have seen
well,
what it has
for a long
offer.
Time. You must have mocked it for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I know what I would have given it, and I, you know, but I came to this knowing this is the kind of game I like, and this is the kind of game I wanted to bring to market. I've always wanted to bring games to market that have a point of view, that are artistic, that when you're done with it, you keep thinking about it. You know, like not just something that's cool. disposable. Like I've said, like, you know, the graphics, are they as good as Battlefield 3? No, of course not. There aren't as many polygons being pushed. But we're trying to do something visually here that is very different than almost any other game on the market. And I think, you know, 5 years from now, this game will still look and sound beautiful in the way that, like, I still pull out a great movie or a great album and play it now from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Like this game will still be what it is, the cool thing that it is now 5 years from now. And like we're not interested in like trying to make the you know the game that's pushing the most polygons or has the most online features. Like, you know, the experience that Sawaki wanted to make, he was actually able to create the thing he wanted, and that's pretty astonishing.
So what do you think about the difficulty question since that came up? And obviously when you talk about the action some, you know, that's definitely a concern, I think, for a lot of players. Bayonetta, remember, got knocked some for that yeah. because it was tough. And yet at the same time, people who really appreciate that, like I know you and I do, especially a game like Bayonetta or like a Ninja Gaiden, where if you master the game, it suddenly starts to click and yep. flow with you. But it's off-putting at first. It has that wall, so it's tough. How do you think the people react to
well,
the difficulty?
Well, I think the best thing we did, and it's actually kind of part of the story, in that Enoch is immortal. He cannot die. So whenever you're playing the game, when you die in combat, you have a chance to come back to life by jamming on the buttons. It's kind of like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. So every time you die, it gets a little harder. You have to press the buttons faster. And okay. after like 6 or 7 times, it's really hard. The most I've ever done is 9. And then if you can't press the buttons fast enough, then you just load a checkpoint. But the checkpoints are really forgiving. And this is also a game with tons of jumping and platforming. And when you fall in a pit, you only lose like 1/16 of a fraction of a life point. So you can actually fall in a pit like 20, 30 times and not die. So I think those two things make it to where you very rarely ever have to like leave the experience and you can just keep going through. And the easy, as I said, is very easy. And then normal starts out easy, gets hard, and then hard and extra hard are insane. I've been playing hard. Hard is like Ninja Gaiden 1, hard, crazy hard. Like enemies are counterattacking and parrying. So.
And extra hard?
Only one person on the development team has ever finished it.
Whoa. You see, now that I approve of this sort of difficulty leveling.
Did he use a game genie?
he used a game genie.
See, I would never do extra hard, but I think if you're going to do an extra hard, that having an extra hard where like yeah, one dude's finished.
As long as one dude has. If it's like no one has ever done it, then it's like, well,
it is possible. So.
And it's selectable, so I'm cool with that. And I hope you guys struck the right balance with normal, because now I'm kind of...
Yeah, I think normal is actually pretty cool, because it starts out easy and gets hard. It actually does force you to learn how to fight. And
I like that.
When you get to like the fourth level, suddenly enemies are overwhelming you, and you have to start defending yourself.
It's like the opposite of The Witcher 2, which started out super hard and got easy.
That's always bad.
It's a little...
You finished The Witcher 2, didn't you?
No, I'm at the end.
I thought you were going
to
finish.
Did you make sweet love to lots of witches?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes. Rose petal gardens, out in the field, lots of places. It's pretty sweet.
Did you like cite all your conquests?
Yeah. I told you he gets a tattoo on his neck of a naked chick.
Is that still there? Whoa. That's still there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. A tattoo, dude. Permanent.
It's an overlooked mechanism.
It's a mystical world. Cats, minus two on tattoo. I don't know what's going on.
Cast
I don't
minus
know.
Two on tattoo.
Is that not a is that another thing, guys? No,
That's not a thing.
All right.
What else have you been playing?
Well, so I've been playing El Shaddai, but I've been pimping it. We do have another game coming out that I actually have been playing the hell out of, which is called Quarrel, which we kind of quietly announced at E3.
We had one of those last week.
Yeah, you guys are quarreling all the time, and it's coming out first actually for iOS at the end of this month. Initially, we announced it as an XBLA game, and it's still coming to XBLA this fall, but this iOS version is coming out first, and so I'm trying to get people to know that it's coming this month. And it's basically Boggle meets Risk, but spectacular.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
very much.
It is
Boggle meets
Risk. That's it. You're four players competing to take over a board, and everybody has troops, and you face another guy trying to take his square. Uh-huh. And you each are given this anagram, eight letters, the same anagram. And based on how many troops are sitting on each square, that's how many letters you can use while trying to solve the puzzle. So if you have eight guys on your square.
I love this.
Yeah, if you have eight
so
guys on your
much.
Square, then you can actually solve the anagram. But say you only have three guys on your square, the other guy has five. You only have three letters to use. He has five letters. And the letters all have point values like Scrabble. And you're trying to make the most point valued word. But the cool thing is the game actually tells you the definitions of all the words that you're giving. And it's,
whoa!
And it has
wait. So you're trying. You have three letters.
That you know,
and then the rest are blank.
So you know all eight of the possible letters.
Okay,
both of you.
And but you can only use up to three.
You can
to
only
create
use
words.
As many letters as you have troops.
Right.
And you can between turns you can like reallocate troops, kind of like Risk. And you can like,
right.
Yeah. So it's easy to learn, really difficult to master, and actually increases your vocabulary.
When does this come out?
So it comes out the end of this month on iOS, and then October.
I'm so into this.
But yeah, and like once we start getting codes, we're going to send them out, because it's basically the next level for both. Kind of like if you've already finished Words with Friends and you want to take it to the next evil, like strategic level, that's kind of what this is.
Yeah, I can see Karen being related to this. Yeah. Karen will eat this up.
It's kind of Scrabble Carcassonne too, a little bit of that. So
that's like that. Do you guys play, I think it's called Seven Words or Less or something? We were playing it at Comic-Con like crazy. I
think I've heard of that one.
Is it also on iPhone or something?
Yeah, it's another iPhone game, and you have groups of letters, and you have to build them into words, and you'll have 16 groups of three letters, mm-hmm. and all of in the seven clues that you get, all of the groups of letters will be used eventually.
Oh, okay.
So you have to use them up and form words that solve the clues.
Oh, wow.
It's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, for me, this is a game I found last March from Denki, these guys in Scotland. And I was like, this game would be fun on any platform for all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they made a board game out of it first, and that was fun. So it's like, this thing's fun.
Well, it's a classic Area Control game, guys, right?
Yeah, classic.
You love your Unplugged games.
I do.
So yeah, I think if everyone here, I think Jeff would actually dig this the most. So I'll definitely
I'm all over it.
The other iPad game I've been playing isn't ours, but it's awesome. And it's a Groove Coaster. I'm sure you guys have already talked about it.
Well, yeah,
it's awesome, possible.
So I picked up on it before the show a couple weeks ago, had just played it for a second, but then I played it a bunch last week, and I'm still playing it now. And was
I love Space Invaders, the one that this guy made, Infinity Gene. So I knew that he has the chops graphically, but I'm surprised. It's such a simple rhythm game, but it works. Like, it's as simple as it could ever be, but like it's all I really need.
I think the key to it is that you can touch anywhere on the screen.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of it, because
it works on the iPad for that reason.
Yeah. You don't have to cover up the part you're trying to look at,
right.
Which is really cool. So it lets you enjoy all the visuals that he put in there, which are really freaking cool. And B, it means that you're not obscuring the next piece that's coming, so you can sort because because at different difficulty levels, there's different numbers of times that you have to tap in rhythm with the game.
Yeah.
And it's important for you to see at least the meter on there so you can say, oh, I'm doing all three beats on this one or just one right. of the three beats.
And so, with so many, especially on the iPad, so many of these tap kind of games, you have to put the iPad on a surface because you need both hands available.
Right. But this one, you can kind of put your fingers where you want
exactly.
and it works.
It's perfect.
And also, I think the pricing model is pretty smart because it seems super cheap. You're like, oh, 99 cents. But then when you get into it, you're like, well, okay, maybe I want some more music. I want these I want these Zuntata tunes. You know,
definitely.
So I can have like a Darius fantasy. So yeah, it was it was awesome.
What you're saying is it's perfect for toilet gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I said iPad, right?
You did say iPad, yeah.
It's a genre now.
And the last game that I've been playing
is... Before you leave iPad, this one's not iPad, right?
What?
The last one.
Coral? No. Oh, but the last one is PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
All right, so we'll get to that. All because right. I want to talk about this iPad thing for a minute. Because since we went down that whole rabbit hole, one thing that's really interesting to me, so I've really been enjoying Groove Coaster. Mm-hmm. And it came out around the same time that I also picked up Sid Meier's Pirates.
Ah.
Which I have not turned on.
Is it just a straight port, or is it a remake?
It's the full game.
Is it Pirates Gold?
I don't know if it has the extra stuff in it, but it is. Okay. It is all of Sid Meier's Pirates, refit to go onto the iPad. It has all of the strategic combat on the ocean. It has the sword fighting bits, which John was telling me is like that part's a little kludgy because mm-hmm. of the control system. But it's all in there. All of that trading and all that stuff is all in there, and I also bought SimCity not that long ago, and this is really reinforcing. I mean, it's one thing to say these things about, oh, the way your handheld gaming habits are and how they've changed and like, oh, you know, iOS works because you play it in a certain way and handhelds didn't, you know, catch with me because I didn't play them. And then it's a whole other case example to be sitting there like buying SimCity, buying Sid Meier's Pirates.
I think if you would have bought Final Fantasy Tactics, to me, that's the one. I mean, like, a lot of people were balking at the price. Oh, $16. Okay, no, $16.
It's Final Fantasy Tactics.
It's $16 for a game that's 100 hours of fun that, right. you know, I spent $50 on more than once. That's
probably
the best game in that genre, more or less. Like,
so you think I should get that?
Well, you know, if you haven't played the hell out of it already, then
I have played the hell out of it, but I love it.
It's up to you. But I
love Tactics.
Like, right now, our friend Che, he's deep in it again because, you know, it is a fantastic game.
But you're not playing it?
I'm not because I'm just too busy. But if I hadn't have already played through that game twice, I would jump at the chance, I think.
I'm curious how well it works on the iPad.
No, the controls are great.
I think
they're
great.
Are they good?
Yeah, and they relocalized it, and the localization's spectacular.
And so last week when I had my video question of the week, I guess I misunderstood because I thought I had read someone saying that the iPad version of Tactics was missing something. But it's not.
No, it's a port of the PSP one that had all the new stuff.
So it has all the new. So
yeah, it has all the new
War
stuff.
Of the Lions. Right?
So I guess I had it backwards.
Right.
So I apologize if you watched the video question.
Yeah, and
if you
never played the PSP version and only played the PS1 version, this does have a bunch of stuff in it.
I've only played the PS1 version.
Yeah, then this has new stuff.
All right, so I should I could totally play it.
But it's $16.
But then my question is, will I have the same effect? Like $16 I can stomach. I mean, obviously it's Tactics, which I love, and I don't mind supporting it. But, you know, I'll play a stupid game, like I'll play Tiny Tower, which is really like just a, you know, punch the numbers up by, it's like a click on things game. It's essentially like Farmville, but have you seen it?
Yeah.
Right. So and I can play that because, you know, I can like sit down while my dinner's heating up or whatever and turn on my iPad and go bing, 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 bing.
No impact.
And my friends are doing it and like, oh, I can see my tower is 30 floors and theirs
but
is whatever.
But isn't the real lie of it all that, I mean, because you'll play Cut the Rope for as long as you would need to play something heftier. You'll sit down and you'll get into something. Stop?
I finished. So, okay, so we'll talk about Cut the Rope because I've been playing that. I've been playing the new Experiments one, and it's really good.
But I hear it's really short.
So far it's only three blocks of levels. So it's probably, I mean, I'm in the second block already, and I do play it like, I'll play it like 5-10 minutes
at a
time.
But it was cheap. It was
Amy's
like
playing Cut the Rope
it was
right
like
now.
Yeah. Was it $2? $3? How much
it's,
was it?
I gotta go.
But it's cheap.
I don't know. It was cheap. Yeah. Yes, it was cheap. But then at the end of those frames, it says, hey, we're going to give you more levels. That's coming soon. So I think
Experiments was actually free. Wasn't it actually free? And that's the whole thing?
Maybe. I think it's cheap. I think it's like $2.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because I know they announced Cut the Rope 2, and then they released Experiments before that.
But like, you know.
But it's really fun. But again, it's the same sort of thing of it's a little more interesting Angry Birds because there's more things to play around with in the physics of it because you're adjusting, you know, like the piece of candy you're trying to get a piece of candy to a frog. And it can and the piece of candy swings on these little gossamer strings, and you use your finger to cut them, and then they like fling around.
But a level takes like a minute, right? It's very
yeah.
Whereas like you're talking about SimCity and Final Fantasy Tactics, you know, you're not going to get in and out of that in a minute,
right? And so I just don't know. Like, and I'll even sit down and play Groove. Like Groove Coaster, I will probably sit down and play.
You can play it for 2 minutes. You can.
But have you ever?
I will attempt
to play just one level.
I have.
Yeah. Groove Coaster, I'll sit down and I'll say, like, I'm just going to play one song, and then I'll play three or four.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the real falsehood is to say to yourself,
that is sort of a falsehood.
Well, thank goodness I'll only play one of these. It's so short, and then you end up playing five.
It's interesting, actually. So in Quarrel, the battles actually do take a long time if you're playing four players. But at any point, you can do the sudden death thing where everyone just kind of, it takes all your squares and all your people, adds it all up, and gives you one puzzle, and everything's multiplied based on what you currently have. So it all comes down to that one.
Just like Final Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Time.
So you can, if you need to end it, you can end it.
The thing I don't understand is why more games don't have asynchronous play I think that's true secret of Words with Friends.
Yeah. And that's what we want to bring to the iPhone version of Quarrel, in a few months. So look for that. And also Facebook Play. I mean, we want to integrate the way that like Scrabble has and all that.
Speaking of Facebook, I just heard about the game that may get
you just heard about Facebook.
I just heard about
there's this thing called Facebook.
Have you guys heard of this?
Bookface.
It's on the internet. Yes. I just heard of the game that may get me to play games on Facebook,
which is
King's Bounty.
Oh yeah,
the old EA game.
No, it's not that old.
Wait, it was for Genesis, but it was originally PC. Was this secretly by Naughty Dog or something or somebody?
No, it was by a Russian. I'm totally blanking on their name. But this was just a couple of years they did King's Bounty and then King's Bounty 2. It is a remake of that old game in a way, but it's basically Heroes of Might and Magic.
But isn't it like Three Force View kind of?
Yeah.
I think somebody weirdly famous was involved with the original version of King's Bounty.
You're probably right.
We shall look this up in the break. But in the meantime, if you have one of your friends playing it, you can get into the beta.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've
gotten a beta invite and I'm resisting it. But for the first time, it's like, because I love those games. King's Bounty and King's Bounty 2 that came out just in the last couple of years. So good.
I'm, as a professional in this industry, I am so fascinated. I will jump into every Facebook game I can because I'm still just waiting to find the one that really.
What about Facebook Sims? A lot of talk about that this week.
Facebook Sims I have not jumped into. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Sims fan, so I'm not sure that my barometer is going to work as effectively with that. You know, I was really into checking out Civ, and they were trying so hard to make a hardcore game that I think that they missed it in a way in that. And the big part of that is that there's so much interface around this little window that it gets very kludgy. And then, again, you have this reality of needing to come back to the game within the set period during which the game runs.
In real time.
Yeah. And it's a long period over which it runs. And you can come back to it, over the day, over the days of the week that during which your game number, whatever, 725 is running. However, it requires that you really can't miss tomorrow or the next day. And that's just not conducive to the way I consume especially a game on Facebook.
It's a little intense.
Hey, yeah. With King's Bounty, you said that you're resisting it. Are you resisting it because it's on Facebook?
Yes.
Really? Why? If it's an experience that you think you're going to enjoy, why don't you at least give it a shot or try it? Because if this game came out on iOS, you would probably download it and be telling us all to play it right now.
I would, absolutely.
So
you're afraid of Facebook.
Why are you afraid of Facebook?
I'll grant you that. I don't use Facebook.
You got poked.
I got poked. I don't want to talk about it.
You ever get one of those super pokes? Dude.
Pass me the bear. I'll show you where he poked me on it.
For everyone at home, I did look to my left to see if there was actually a bear there. I don't know what's going on.
And there was Peta Bear waiting for you.
I guess I have to put some money in the thing. Here's the thing. I don't really use Facebook. That's unfortunate, but
it's the worst thing ever.
I'm kind of with you there. Yeah, I don't play games on Facebook either.
No. But I mean, I don't even go to Facebook. I use Facebook in the sense that I get emails when someone sends me a message on Facebook.
Right, I'm kind of the same way.
That's how I use it.
And like, this is a game you really love, the last way you want it to brought back is like a free to play dumbed down version. You want like a real game, right?
Well, you don't want it dumbed down.
It indicates everything I've seen indicates that it is the game. Oh. But I haven't played it, so it may be dumbed down. Right, well,
I'm not against playing games on Facebook, but I mean, I just don't use that service enough, and I would hate to get into something where it would start to completely destroy my friends lists.
You know what? Social games are coming on the networks that are going to continue to improve. We already know. We talked about the Pixel Junk stuff that they're working on.
There's a Facebook Pixel Junk game.
They're doing monsters for Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw it. It was pretty cool. And we've got Civ that's trying to move in there. You've got King's Bounty that's moving in there. You've got EA bringing their titles. You know, they're doing as well as The Sims. They've also been trying to bring games over like Monopoly. So they're trying to work both sides of that equation.
The big rumor is games for Google Plus as well.
It's not a rumor anymore. We found out today. I was about to say
today.
Yeah.
So
where was I?
Today, Google Plus announced there are now 18 games. Wasn't that the number, I think? 28 games.
Any big names?
It's mostly the sort of stuff you would expect.
Bejeweled.
Sneaky snake.
Surprise, surprise. But you know,
really, it was Bejeweled, right?
Of course, there's Bejeweled in there.
I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
Perhaps surprise. A Blitz is thrown in there somewhere.
I'm sure.
For good measure.
There's gonna be a Zuma in there. You know how it goes.
Zuma.
All right. So we've got all that, and it's all about access because it's you have to get your game in front of people. We got another story about that coming up in the news at the end of the show with Battlefield not coming to Steam, which is creating quite a stink. So the access wars, Facebook, social. Different PC marketplaces, all of that coming up in the news. We still have the warning to come. We still have more games to talk about. You don't want to miss it. Stick around. We will be back on the other side. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. You just can't get away from the apps, can you? You know, now we've had that little intro discussion about iPad apps and how we consume them. That's a good reason to stick around for the warning where we're going to talk about the handhelds and how the 3DS and Vita are going to do this holiday season and beyond. I want to, while Shane's here, like detour for a second into Final Fantasy XIII.
Breaking my heart again.
Which I got back into. And
and when I saw you getting back into it, I almost like waved a flag.
Like
don't.
Stop!
It's not like... I'm curious if when you get to the end of that game, if you'll be able to beat the last boss. Like, I was not. And I had to go level if I wanted to do it. And I, after all that time...
You did it, right? You went
no.
You didn't
I
go grind?
I got to the last boss.
How many hours in was that?
60. And...
Come on, dude. How many traditional Japanese RPGs have you gone ground out before going
well,
to...
Well, you know, I never finished 12 either. And, like, it really hurts me because, I love Final Fantasy.
Yeah,
and, like,
we both do.
And 13, you know, I like things about it, but I wasn't compelled enough to put the effort into grind after the 60 hours.
Dude, I got to, because I'm like you. I did not finish 12, but I want to finish 12 as well. I finished 7, I finished 8, I finished 10, I finished 10-2.
Well, and I'm excited. Well,
I never played 9. 9 is the other one I'm going to go
play. It's a mess. I beat it twice. But so 13-2, I want to be excited for 13-2. I want it to be good. I like 10-2. And I guess maybe I will try to finish 12.
Finish 13. Finish 13.
But...
Or finish 12 or finish 13?
Finish 13. But I say bailout. I really do.
No, no way. Because here's what's got me back into it is it took me, like, and I think that the complaint that people leveled that I will completely agree with is that it holds your hand for way too long.
20 hours. Well, okay, have you gotten to Grand Pulse?
No, I'm in
okay, you haven't even gotten to the good
part. I know.
You haven't even gotten to the good part.
I understand this. I'm in Chapter 7, and Chapter 7 lasts a long time. Yeah. I keep thinking that I've gotten to the end of Chapter 7 because there'll be like little mini climaxes.
No, that's the longest chapter in the game.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I buy that because I just keep on going through Chapter 7. What I like is it's finally giving me at least three character parties all the time, and I really like that combat system.
Me too.
The idea of thinking tactically but not having to – like the idea of like, oh, okay, right now I need a Ravager. I need a Commando. Oh, I need a Medic. Shit, I need a Sentinel. I need a Sentinel to hold this guy's off.
Awesome.
And then I need a Medic.
Paradigm Shift is awesome. The battle system is awesome. Too bad the characters aren't very likable.
Jesus, they're not.
God, the storytelling is
heavy-handed. What do you mean you don't like the character? It's a beautiful story.
Who do you like? I mean, I kind of like
– Who comes on screen and you're like, finally, I get to hear Hope again.
Yeah, when Hope –
Fuck that shit. Sweet Jesus.
Okay, I agree that I don't like the voicing of Hope. But this story of like this whole story of you know big societal issues and then them causing interpersonal problems and anger and how do you deal with the anger at individual people when the reason that the anger exists is because of large scale
get it out of your system in the next 3 weeks because there's other games coming. I mean like
why I want to know why you're excited about 13-2 then.
Well, because I liked 10-2, and I liked when they feel like they have to just get a return on investment, and they can go a little wacky with their systems. Because you know we all know that 13-2 is just mostly repurposed assets. We're going to be fighting enemies we've already fought and going through areas we've already gone through. Hopefully, that the actual gameplay is awesome. Because in 10-2, they went kind of nuts.
What do you hope?
I love 10-2.
Well, I know you love 13-2.
You know I'm a big devotee of the dress
Well,
spheres.
We already know that 13-2 is much more open-ended, and it's not as linear. And that was the huge problem.
I agree.
I'm okay with linear JRPGs, but 13 is like a giant corridor where two people are holding your hands.
For
and
sure.
like we already know that 13-2 is way more wide open. There's all these new systems.
Yeah.
Things I don't like about it is you only have two people in your party and a monster. Like I don't like that. But I'm trying to keep an open mind, and they're showing a lot of new assets this week. But my final Final Fantasy thing is they announced that Versus 13 is not at TGS. I'm like, What? Nomura? Like, seriously, Nomura? Really? Really? Versus 13? I've been waiting for this like four...
2015.
4 years, and you can't show it?
Dude, the emphasis is 13 too, and so they can't... They can't... You know that's what it is.
Well, and the other crazy... Okay, I thought there was the last Final Fantasy thing. Maybe I'm walking on your news, but you know, like, the downloadable demo of Final Fantasy Type-0, the new PSP game, came out yesterday and for PSP.
No, I did
and
not
And it is
this.
Beautiful. I watched some videos of it. I didn't play it myself. But apparently the controls are, like, incomprehensible. The camera is, like, the worst camera you've ever seen. And it's a straight-up action RPG, which is kind of crazy.
But it's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Worse than Epic Mickey?
I'm pretty sure there's a blog post on the Square...
For camera controls?
Nice I'm pretty little... sure there's actually a blog post on the Square Enix blog that explains how it works. Like, that's that bad.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw that earlier.
What can I say?
13 is a touchy subject, dude. I don't want to talk about it.
And I do like the story. I do like the cinematics. Who do I characters I like? I like Lightning.
I like her. Well, I like best thing about 13, the soundtrack. I like the soundtrack.
I like
the, you know, the character I really don't like is I'm not feeling Snow.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not seeing Snow. What's that?
Oh, how to beat the last boss.
We got someone telling you how to beat the boss.
Yeah, apparently I need to go and...
Are we streaming this live?
Yeah, how's that happening?
We should stream it live.
Well, yeah, but I've been told, that before. I need to go finish the mark quests.
Like, oh, on Grand Pulse.
And when you do that, you will have everything.
Which is like the hunting stuff in 12, right?
And it's awesome. Well, when you get to Grand Pulse, the game seems awesome again for like a few hours. So anyway.
It seems awesome right now. Seems awesome.
Any newer games you're playing?
This is all making me want to go back to play Crisis.
What other newer games
am I
playing?
I want to hear Zev talk about Dead Island.
All right, Zev, talk
about it. Oh, okay, so Dead Island.
We
talked about I saw it at GDC, and they finally showed the game off after it had that spectacular trailer, and then we learned the game is not like that at all.
Well, I saw it there too, and I was excited about it.
I mean, we had differing opinions about it. So I actually got to play a preview build, which has a weird 1 hour time limit. After a time limit, it's like, thank you for playing your preview build, and it turns off the system. Super weird, right? And because it doesn't explain it to you because it's built into the menu, so it looks like a Dead Island menu. I was like, am I supposed to be doing? I was talking to Garnet. I was like, am
it
I
was
supposed
weird.
To be doing a quest? Like, I don't know what's
going
on. There
was like a quest timer on the screen, and we're like.
Maybe it's meant for like an in-store demo or disc.
Can you restart it after an hour? And you restart it?
I think you can restart and play because there's four playable characters. You can save and you can go back to it and it remembers the time.
Wow.
There's four playable characters and you could select all four playable characters.
It would be pretty funny if it didn't remember the time. It's like you can only play this demo an hour at a time.
Every 59 minutes I'm turn off.
There's a mandatory 30-minute waiting period between.
So I turned it on and it shows you the four characters. It's two women and two men. And I'm listening. And when you select the character, it gives you a little bio, and they read it to you.
Damn.
First of all,
they're all like that.
Someone needs to copy edit a lot of it because it's not really working for me. Yeah, Sam B totally lives up to what we saw at GDC. Is one of the characters is this washed up rap star who became famous because he decided to write a joke song because he didn't want to talk about bitches and hoes and all this other shit, and he wrote a joke song, and that's what made him famous. And then that's the song, so he changed his entire career path.
He became the Weird Al of rap.
Do they have that song in the game?
Yes, that is the song that plays in the opening cinematic, and it is horrible. It's terrible.
What country is this developer located in again?
Techland is, I think, Poland? Croatia?
Eastern European.
It is because there is a character from Texas, you'll appreciate this, Garnet,
I'm pretty sure I'm not going to appreciate this.
Who is the carbon cutout of, or the, you know, cookie cutter idea of what you would think someone from Texas is like. Also, because he is...
I'm rooting, I'm tooting! That guy?
Kind of like that. He's also he's a former football star.
Wait, what do you think I would think someone from Texas is like?
I don't know. I'm saying you would appreciate how they get it all wrong because it's a cookie cutter idea.
I see Shane's mind's working.
Yeah, what's the name of the governor who's running for president from Texas? Him.
Rick Perry.
So, I'm looking at all these characters. They're reading me their bios. I turn around to Garnet, who's watching me play, and I honestly said, I don't want to pick any of them. They're all
not even
horrible.
The women are horrible.
Come
on. Is there none of the above options?
Can I play a zombie or something? Like, it's terrible. So I don't really like the characters, but then I get into the game, and it's kind of fun. And one thing that it does well, there's a game that came out on Xbox called Breakdown.
Yeah,
the first person vomiting and punching game.
Yes, exactly. Which I actually love. Okay,
it's a game. It's a really ambitious game.
It holds true to everything is first person, and when you're walking, like there's that slight bob of the head.
But I think the controls are slightly problematic, but the game does manage to overcome them somehow.
I've never drank a soda in first person better than in that game.
Well, you will soon because the same thing in Dead
Island.
So
Dead Island's
well.
First person,
first
entirely,
completely
yeah.
first person.
Can you even play third person?
You cannot play third person. And the entire game is, you know, you're walking around and you have that slight head bob. I don't know why everyone's head is bigger than their bodies, apparently.
Yours doesn't do that. Mine does that.
Not really. So, but the thing that is funny about it, when you finally get into the game, so it starts and you see all of these, like, bags of luggage are around and you can open them. And there's all these icons that pop up. And, like, you can open this. You can open this. And, like, so all of these icons are just all over the place, totally ruin the atmosphere. And you can open this luggage and collect money, which I know when I see zombies around, the first thing I think about is, let me get all this money. Because you don't learn until, like, an hour later that you can use that money to buy stuff.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So, like, well, why would I
you
have...
You wouldn't think that's the case?
Yeah, well, I would now because I've played this game. And
okay,
it's trained
do you have a limited... inventory like RE, or can you carry as much
you
as
do
you
do have a limited inventory for certain weapons. I mean, you will be able to pick up weapons, and they're all based on your level. So if you're level one, you can only use level one or
well, so there's melee and projectiles.
There are, I've only seen melee, and you can actually throw any weapon. So like, yeah, if you have a knife, you can throw the knife at a guy.
Supposedly projectiles are super rare, and if you pick up a gun, it has like two bullets
so
in it.
Yeah. What does the melee combat feel like?
It is a lot like the fighting in Breakdown.
Oh, okay, that's
so it is very, you feel the weight of everything. Even when you actually open a piece of luggage and go to press the button to collect it, they kind of move forward as though they're lunging toward it. So they really do emphasize, like, this is your character. You're you know, experiencing this all in this one perspective. But then, and this might be a preview thing. I'm hoping that they'll fix this in the final game. But the game doesn't recognize the character you've selected. So there's a point where you need to save someone. And you save them, and then you find all of these people who are holed up. And he gets on the radio and says, I found him. The guy that you told me that I need to save, I found him. I was playing as a woman at that point. The game didn't recognize the fact that I selected the wrong character.
Maybe you're actually a dude.
That's probably.
You know what? Maybe that's probably the origin story. Spoilers. I didn't listen to her saying the entire thing. So there was that, and that was super weird. And then there's this huge, you know, people did say that it took a lot of the stuff from Dead Rising. I mean, you can pick up all these little trinkets and then, you know, mash them together to create this awesome thing.
At a workbench,
right. just like Dead Rising 2. So there is that element to it. And the problem is that you don't really get any indication of, like, all of these things will work in tandem very well, because you do find blueprints. But it's not like in Dead Rising 2 where you can open the blueprint and realize what you need. I couldn't realize what I would need to create something until I went to a workbench.
Is it open world and you're taking on missions?
Open world.
It reminded me a lot of Far Cry 2, which is a game I loved.
It does have elements of that,
Are there marauding bands of angry people who spawn and attack you all the time? I guess there's zombies.
They're called zombies.
They're called zombies. Like, that was Far Cry 2. Yeah.
So, I mean, I played it for a while, and then the game just folds in on itself. So there was a part where you get to a life tower, and this... The people who are holed up drive there in a truck, and then later they, you know, park and everyone's okay. Literally 5 minutes later, I'm like, I want to get in this truck and drive around this island because it's a huge island. The truck is on cinder blocks. Like, within 5 minutes of them driving there, which was totally
cool.
Gotta
make sure
like
the zombies
people,
don't push it into the ocean.
And then, but the thing that the game turns into is the fetch quest. So that it's on cinder blocks.
Fetch tires.
You need to find
four spark plugs,
and then I need to go get gas for another mission.
But it does have vehicles. You will eventually get to drive.
Will eventually get vehicles, so you can drive around the island. And the game does look pretty good. I mean, Techland, I think this is their fifth iteration of their engine, and it is powering this, and I think Risen 2 is another game that's powering.
Well, they also did that, it's like a racing, ATV racing game, Techland, right?
It came out,
Nailed.
Yeah, so, I mean, it looks cool. The thing is it is a full-on, like, score. To me, it seems like a... it's not even survival horror in the sense that, first of all, I was looking for zombies at one point. There weren't a lot of zombies that I was seeing.
So I think that it does depend where you play. We're talking about Dead Island, and this is a zombie game that's coming up. That's like, you'd be quickly confused, I think, with Left 4 Dead because of the zombie survival element. However, there are it's trying to be different. And I think one of the things you're getting at is like this high score mentality of it. There are places where you faced, I mean, I've played later parts of demos of it where there are just hordes upon hordes upon hordes of enemies. It's very big on emphasized weapons.
Yeah.
Very big on improvised weapons. You're supposed to be constantly picking up weapons, and for some reason, beating down zombies tends to degrade anything. Even, you know, if you've got a sledgehammer, a few whacks on a zombie and it's done.
Right, but explain to me why I can beat up a zombie with an oar, but I can't use a sledgehammer because I'm not level 5. Like, how does that work?
Sledgehammer heavy.
Can't pick it up yet.
I mean, if I'm playing as the big burly dude, how can I not pick up a sledgehammer? Like, I can pick it up and put it in my bag. It's in my inventory.
You just can't use it yet.
But I cannot use it.
Well, and it's co-op. But two-player co-op, or is it like
I think it's four.
It is four-player co-op.
Through the main game, or is it a separate mode?
It's through the main game. It's main campaign game.
Anything mundane is more fun with friends.
Absolutely.
True that.
Like, you know, four friends hitting a bunch of zombies with baseball bats, like, yeah,
and the thing about these
there.
Zombies is that their thing is very much that they get knocked over and they're bloody, but then they get back up and keep coming at you.
But so these sexy, scantily clad zombie women from all the promotions, she's not in the game. You didn't see her.
But there are lots of girls in bikinis. I saw Zav.
Zombie girls?
Zombie girls.
Zav did
also,
you'll be happy.
You should definitely talk about your awesome zombie mastectomy you did with that dagger. Ooh. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. You can, like, when they were laying on the ground, you could totally cut off limbs and stuff that stuff is really cool. The actual, you know, the tactile feeling of killing them is awesome. That part of it I really like. The thing that makes me laugh, too, it's like all these game ideas thrown into this realistic world. Like, tell me how this woman who is wearing a thong has $20 on her. Like, you know what I mean?
Or you don't want to know.
Exactly. I even said to Garnet, I'm like, I don't want to know where she's hiding it.
She can also smoke cigarettes with that thing.
It's terrible. There's all these like little game ideas, and the thing that drives me crazy the most is I really think the environment looks great, but when I see all these icons of like this little gear of telling me that I can go open something, it's like that's ruining the experience for me.
Yeah, so to explain like what he's talking about, every single interactive object in the game has like this icon that comes up like press X.
Oh, and also when you actually open the thing and it's no longer usable, instead of disappearing, it appears but with an X on it.
Well, that's just let you know that you've checked it off.
I like a world that has lots of interactability.
There's a cart full of baggage. Yeah, you need to see all the baggage.
I do that. I do like that, but I don't need to be able to see an icon from like a mile away saying, by the way. Yeah. And also, when you need to like line up perfectly in order to pick things up. It's another weird thing about the perspective in it.
Right. He sounds a little sour. I have to say that like I'm not sour. I'm not like gung ho for this game. I like the throwing stuff. There's lots of cool ways to throw weapons. There's lots of ways to like blow stuff up. It looks like a fun co-op, definitely. I don't think I'd enjoy it as much single player. It looks like a fun co-op zombie romp.
I'm saying the game stuff of it drives me a little crazy, but the actual playing and killing the zombies part I think is cool.
Yeah. So and then there's where the scoring part seems to fit in pretty well. So I definitely think that you could have a lot of fun with this thing online. I don't know. I'm optimistic. It does, you know, the other thing we talked about is it looks good when you're looking at the screen, but it feels like there's something not quite right about the way you move in it.
You know, in Killzone 2, when it had that sort of like the waving of the gun sort of had this weight to it. A lot of the game has that weight to it, too.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you play Left 4 Dead, it is very like, you know, swing, very straight swing. This game, you lunge, you have to sort of
inertia.
Prepare. Yes. Yeah. There's a stamina bar that, you know, it dictates how much you can actually swing at things and run. And so it does have a lot of really cool ideas like that to make it realistic, but then there are parts of it that just break.
Too bad it doesn't have Timmy's family in it.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Although there is a room that you walk into and you see what looks like the mother and father from that trailer holding hands dead on the ground.
They added that in. They'll be like,
genius.
We heard you guys. You wanted that moment. Sad. Aren't
Perhaps.
You sad? Sad. There's like a note there.
All right. Who's been playing something they liked then? Let's talk about something they really liked. All right, what'd you like?
Well, I've been playing a lot of, Indie Jeff gave us assignments for later.
He did, indeed.
And their independent games got me onto Steam, and I'm excited to talk about the games that he told us to talk about. I'll wait till
Don't make
here.
Him a secret. Let the audience can share along. What are the assignment games, and they can play along?
Trauma and the Stanley... What's
Parable.
It called? Parable.
Half-Life 2 mod.
Half-Life 2 mod. Both of them. Very excited to talk about when Jeff is here, but he assigned them, so I'll wait for him to be there. But it got me onto Steam, and it got me starting to look at all the...
Dude, he's on Facebook this week and Steam. It's like he's discovering the internet.
It is. I also got emails.
Holy
Weird.
Shit.
What?
So I was looking at a bunch of the games that have come out recently, and I bought myself Terraria.
Supposed to be fantastic.
It was half off.
Supposed to be fantastic.
Have not played nearly enough of it to give it.
It's supposed to be
opinion.
Really, really good.
But the game I did... go down the rabbit hole and play and really like is Runespell Overture.
Okay.
I think I've said on the show how big of a fan I was or have been of the Puzzle Quest games.
Mm-hmm.
This is very much in that vein of imposing sort of a role-playing shell onto what is ostensibly a card game. And it also kind of has a little Magic the Gathering elements as well. But the basic...
Building a deck?
Yeah, you build a deck of allies that give you certain bonus powers. But really, the actual combat of the game is poker slash Yahtzee.
Hmm.
And you have...
I like this idea.
Yeah, so you know how in Puzzle Quest, when you get into a fight, it becomes Bejeweled, and you fight in a Bejeweled world.
Right.
Same thing happens here. You get into a fight, and you're still on that node world, or you go node to node, and then fight! So you go into a fight, and it shows a deck of cards stacked up. Almost looks like Solitaire.
Solitaire, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not Solitaire. What you're doing is you click and drag cards to create stacks like you would in Solitaire, but you're creating stacks that are poker hands or sort of Yahtzee combinations.
Based on suit or based on like...
You can do that. You can make flushes. You can make straights. You can make... You're doing 5-card poker hands. You want a full house. So, and each of them...
Based on the cards you brought into battle.
There's stacks of cards there, and there's a stack of your cards, and then below that, a stack of your enemy's cards.
And you
cards.
Play your cards on, like, you and your enemy are both trying to play cards on this field of cards.
No, you make your stack, he makes his stack, but you can steal cards from his stack onto your stack, and he can do the same.
Mm.
As long as you haven't stacked two cards on top of each other face up yet, if there's just single card waiting there, you can steal it from him or he can steal it from you. So you sort of have to be able to keep an eye on what he needs and not leave that available for him to steal on his turn. Also, all the while, checking what he's doing so that you can steal it for your deck.
Are you rolling dice too?
No, there's no dice rolling.
You said it was like Yahtzee.
Well, you know how in Yahtzee you're rolling dice, but you're assembling groups of numbers?
Right.
It's the same kind of thing here. And the better the poker hand that you assemble, the bigger the attack that you'll be able to unleash on your enemy. So you can create these stacks, and you don't have to attack right away. You can line them all up and be strategic about when you're going to attack. And the game is visually very beautiful, even better than Puzzle Quest, I would say. It has 3D models, and when you do unleash the attacks, there's like animations of you doing a magical attack. And then the other layer that's on top of this sort of poker slash Yahtzee combat element is that you're also having a collectible card game a la Magic. So when you're defeating people, you can get them as allies, and then they have a little card that shows their stats and what special abilities they can give you if you equip them as your allies. But you can also find Magic spells, items, all kinds of stuff that are cards, and certain ones are more rare than others, and certain ones cost money, and you can only equip a certain number of them at a time. So you're building this deck of available things, and then certain guys will have, a fire attack, and you'll have a fire shield, or will have a cold attack.
It's pretty damn detailed.
It's very deep.
So it's like, one of the things they did with Puzzle Quest was they started adding more special attacks. They made melee more important, and they did some more of the special gems inside of the mana system. So to add more depth, it sounds like this game already has all of that and then some.
Yeah, it has a ton of depth. And there's a really cool mechanic, too, where there'll be like a treasure chest in the middle of the battle. And in order to unlock the treasure chest to get whatever item is in there, you have to do a specific card hand. So even if that card hand isn't the best card hand, if it's like only a pair... So you would never attack with just a pair because it's a really weak attack, but it's beneficial for you to assemble that hand so that you can unlock the chest as well.
So really great, deep, obviously, puzzle and card building and poker-like battle system in this. So the game is RuneScape Overture. It's on
Steam.
It's $10 on Steam.
Do you think it would work as an iPad game?
Absolutely. Okay, I can't imagine it's not going to be one.
But with a name like RuneScape Overture, obviously they're aspiring also to a story and fantasy. So where does that part come in?
It's very deep. Very heavily story-based. Unfortunately, the writing is a little silly, but it's got cinematics. It's got, not full-on cinematics, but it's got cinematic stuff to it. It takes place during this big blizzard, and they call it the Great White or something like that. And you're assembling characters and you go into towns and you talk to them, very much like Puzzle Quest was.
Mm-hmm.
And the interactions are just a little bit. Your guy is written very anachronistically, so he kind of is like, "Hey, what's with your wife?" which doesn't really fit in the. But the cool thing is, it's set in Europe. It's not set in Fantasy World X with 12 apostrophes. It's set in a real place during a real time. It just got really fantastical elements kind of so that you'll encounter a woman, she'll be like, I'm from Italy. And it's like, oh, Italy. Wow. Yeah, and I could do fireballs. It's like, oh, okay. That's a tasty meatball.
Do you know Mario?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's great. I really like it.
Shane, you said you were playing something on Xbox and PS3.
Well, I've been playing Shadows of the Damned for the last 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm still sad that, like, nobody, seemingly nobody bought this game.
You've heard me, like, I love it. I went crazy for
it. I love it, too. For me, it's the sequel to RE4 that we never got, because RE5 sucks, and it's...
Disagree.
Really?
Sweeping.
I liked RE5, but...
I liked it. It's not,
I played it in co-op,
good
though.
So.
Yeah, in co-op, it's good.
Yeah, I played single player, and I actually kind of liked it.
It's not a bad game, but compared to RE4, it's a bad game.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
But it would be hard to live up to 4.
But you know, I say about Shadows of the Damned, I think the localization is spectacular.
I agree with that.
It's one of the best localized
games. Despite the fact that we're our friends.
I mean, we know them.
Our friends worked on it, but still, it really sings.
Yeah.
Well, didn't 8.4 basically, they were allowed to do whatever they wanted with that?
Yeah.
And it was like one guy who just decided to write this crazy story.
And, like, the content from Grasshopper was clearly so insane that they could take it to this insane level and have fun with it. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it's as good as RE4 either, but I do think if you liked Resident Evil 4, then you should be playing Shadows of the Damned. And you're not.
How far have you gotten in it?
I'm only about halfway.
Oh, you should.
You
need to definitely
need to go back
it.
And
it is so good. Yeah. It's like,
But yeah, I feel like everyone slept on it, and you know, I think it's already maybe gone down in price a little bit. So, you know, like, if you like RE4, go buy
that. And Child of Eden are both like $30 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because they're both great games. They came out like the same day, and yeah, So actually, Child of Eden, I've been waiting on it. I've been kind of saving it for when I have, like, you know, 6 hours in front of my Kinect to have a synesthesia experience. So maybe this weekend I'll try to play Child of Eden.
Sounds like a good idea. Yeah. Zav and I have both been trying out this interesting shooter called Hard Reset.
I've actually tried this game too.
Oh, that's right, you had tried it out as well. It
has really cool gun models.
Yes.
Well, you know what? I have to.
You don't like them?
You don't like
it? Wait, can we start? Let's take a step back before I get too deep. What is, I don't know, I haven't even heard
of
this game.
Okay, so Hard Reset is a first-person shooter game. It's coming from folks who worked on Painkiller and who worked on Serious Sam.
And Bulletstorm
and Bulletstorm,
Witcher 2.
And Witcher 2.
Said a lot of games I like.
And so and you totally get that vibe right off the bat.
PC game?
Yes,
yeah,
PC game.
But I say, no, like, whereas Serious Sam looks like ridiculous, this game kind of looks like Blade Runner in a cool way.
No, it looks like, I meant that vibe in as far as
big crazy things.
Big crazy things, you,
tons of enemies rushing at you, very relentless.
No, but the aesthetics are good.
The aesthetics are really good. It definitely has total Blade Runner, even down to like the crazy neon-covered dirigibles that are like flying through with
very
like,
Blade Runner
on the side of them. But that's cool. I really like that part. And it has that sort of that weird, you know, afraid of technology of the future kind of vibe where you're humanity and you're fighting off sentient robots.
Okay, but I will say the one thing that didn't grab me were the enemy designs. They seem like I've seen
they're
these
toasters.
I've seen these exact enemy types in like every FPS.
There's a toaster with wheels and a saw blade. There's a toaster with a helicopter blade on top of that can fly some. There's a bigger toaster with arms.
So it's a Battlestar Galactica game.
Nice.
Yeah, somewhere.
But the thing that I really like about the game is that you only have these two standard issue weapons. And these two weapons, one's a plasma gun and one's a machine gun. And when you collect, you know, skill points, you can go into this little area and actually decide to unlock certain elements to the gun. So you can get your machine gun. Yeah, upgrade pod. You can actually turn the machine gun into a shotgun, and it changes modes. Like, you click the right I was playing with the controller. You click the right bumper, and it changes to shotgun mode. And then you can also unlock a grenade mode for that. So this one gun turns into three. And then the plasma gun does the same thing. And
they actually turn into five. So there's actually, five different – and each of those five
intricately animated
– has three – upgrade levels underneath it. So you might get the grenade launcher, but then there's an alt fire that launches a grenade that will start like a gravity gun and like pull enemies towards it. And then there's
you only ever have the one gun and you mod that
two
out?
Guns.
So
one of one of them is like energy, like blue plasma-y stuff, and the other one's more like physical, like shoots bullet things or whatever. Like
bullet things.
Well, shoots. they're not really bullets. I don't know what they are. I guess they're like supposed to be like plasma projectiles. Some sort of projectile. And that one also does it shoots like a trap weapon. It shoots a grenade. And then there's like two others.
There's a sniper mode where you can actually unlock an X-ray vision so you can see through walls and snipe guys through walls and stuff. But here's the problem with that. The problem is that when you switch modes between these guns, there's a little icon that indicates which gun you've selected. And it's like some hieroglyphic that I'm supposed to learn from I don't know where, you know.
Croatia.
You know what? There's no real great indication of what kind of weapon you're picking from your
very small visual differentiation.
Yes. And also, even if you were to, like, okay, I know what the sniper rifle looks like, so if I switch to the sniper rifle, I get it. There's a part where I stopped playing the preview just because I had other things to do, where it was a dark room. And it doesn't help when it's completely dark out and I can't see my gun model to know which one I'm selecting. So when I'm fire, when I have hordes of enemies coming at me and I want to shoot landmines and I end up selecting the gravity or the grenade launcher by accident and firing at my feet, I end up killing myself.
Yeah, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, you know what? I really shouldn't have. I should have read the manual for their book, you know?
So basically it shows you an icon.
Yes.
That changes, but there's only three states of the icon, or is there six states of the icon?
There's three states because the certain weapons have alt fires. So, like, the grenade launcher has a gravity alt fire. And it's hard to remember. And then the other problem with it is, like, if I'm at machine gun and I want to go to grenade launcher, I have to click over twice. And I have to wait for the animation to change to shotgun, then wait for it to change to grenade. Yeah. And when enemies are rushing toward you, that's not.
So it's a two-stage weapon changing system. So you have one weapon on Q and one weapon on E. And then after you switch between Q and E, then you use the numerical keys to choose the function of the weapon.
Got
so you
it.
Go, like, Q to go to the machine gun. And then, like, one is your machine
Q2.
Gun. Q2 is your grenade
launcher.
You
can't go from one to three. You have to go through two?
Yeah, you have to go. Well, you'd have to go. You have to switch. You have to choose which sort of weapon you want in your hand, and then choose which type you have. It'll go back to whatever you had last.
Yeah.
So if you were using the grenade launcher last, then you go right back to it. It's great. I mean, I think that the game has really tons of potential, but that part to me is a critical flaw because it's doing that old. It's a great old school painkillery kind of. Here's a freaking ton of dudes.
Yeah.
Looks beautiful. Tons of great stuff to shoot with a good difficulty curve. But then when you've got to be able to use all these weapons, you don't have time to fuck around with, like, do I have a grenade? Oh, shit. I got the wrong gun.
Yeah, and a lot of the enemies, like, rush at you and explode. And, like, that part of the game I don't like. But the rest of it, I mean, it looks great. And the gunplay actually is really good. I mean, these guys have a good pedigree. Mm-hmm. I think it's Flying Pig Studios.
Yeah, that's the name of it. It's
Flying Pig Studios.
And even on my like 2.5-year-old gaming machine, the game looks gorgeous.
I'd say they're kind of doing it themselves. I mean, it's just on Steam. They're doing their own PR, so it's kind of, you know, it's a groundswell from.
I really hope they do a demo because I think that there's definitely a core crowd that'll be really into it. And then I hope they listen to some, and maybe they can do something, you know, now even still to differentiate those weapons. Because if I could tell the difference, it would be alone would be a huge benefit to make it more fun.
I think Painkiller fans are gonna love it.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. Well, you know how fans are about games. They get upset when they hear things they don't like. When we come back on the other side, I'm going to start off with a little bit of rational explanation about Diablo 3. We'll talk a little bit about game journalism, and then we will hop right into the handheld debate. Stick around. We will be right back with that after the latest Del Rio mix.
Hey, you want to come down here and see what's in this auction house?
Every region of the world will have its own auction house based on the currency of whatever it is. I mean,
this auction house has some very special items.
Brilliant.
Mexico will have a peso one, and Canada will have Canadian dollars. America will have American dollars. French.
Keep going.
I would like to hear the rest of the
Brilliant.
Country,
Brilliant.
Auction house. Auction house. Auction house. It's auction house. Auction house. Auction house. Auction house. It's auction house.
If you guys like Risk,
sounds cool. That sounds awesome.
Brilliant.
How, wait, what is it?
It's so much fun. It's fun. Fun. Telling you, Shogun. Such
Shogun
a
two?
Good game.
Shogun 2.
Got our very Jeff
Shogun
Mattis.
Two. Shogun 2.
Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, isn't it that the sooner you pre-order, the sooner you get to log in?
This auction house has some very special items.
There'll be a second auction house.
Sounds cool. That sounds awesome.
That sounds awesome.
That does sound awesome, as always. One day we are going to get around to having that big Del Rio compilation disc available somewhere, somehow. It'd be special. Be something special. We'll figure it out.
Our microphones got really close. While
You're like, where did my microphone go? So a couple of things I want to do housekeep here at the very beginning. First of all, last week, one of the things I was talking about was my comments, which I made several times, about what we do in the games media not being journalism. And people were quick to point out folks like Patrick Klepek. Obviously, what Klepek does, I think, is an anomaly compared to the vast majority of what you read. So please, like, yes, there are people, especially like Patrick and like what Luke did, who go in and do they spend the time to build up stories, and they go through all of those practices that are part and parcel of journalism. I think what I was trying to... I feel like a lot of times in this business, we're still trying to convince our parents that what we do is legit. And so we
still a young industry.
And we look at the word journalism and go, "Oh, my parents know what a journalist is. I'm a journalist."
My parents tell people I'm in jail, so.
And you know, I don't think we need to do that, because what we do, you know, what most of what we do, and I'm speaking now about like magazines and the websites, blogs like Shaq News and Kotaku and Joystick, is very PR driven. Like, we're out there covering games. Games are coming up. You want to see screenshots. You want to see trailers of them.
That isn't unique among any of the media industries. Yeah. Like, anything that where things are products are being released for people to consume. Well, obviously the press is going to have a part of talking about those products,
right,
reviewing those products. But on top of that, the industry itself does need to be covered and policed, and the trends need to be talked about. And people need to, if there is a scoop to be found, there should be journalists in the gaming world who will find that scoop and put it out there.
Please don't misunderstand me. I wasn't trying to argue that there shouldn't be those. I was trying to say that I think that the vast majority of what we do isn't that. And there's a lot, and all of us out there writing previews and reviews, and all of us being critics and talking about things. I mean, it doesn't mean that you should not believe me if I don't hang a sign around that says, "Look at me, I'm a journalist."
Say, you know, Garn,
that
being,
doesn't mean you shouldn't take my point.
Being part of the product review and coverage cycle doesn't mean you can't be a journalist and you can't have an opinion, and like, it doesn't, just the fact that someone sends you a review copy of the game, like, you're still a journalist when you review it.
Okay, so I think we're on a semantics point, because
I think that's exactly the problem.
Yeah, it's a semantics
I think that
point.
No one understands, or I think there's a lot of misunderstanding as to what the term journalist should mean.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people equate journalist to objective or to critical and
that's not
doubtful. And it doesn't
That's not what
to
you learn in school. And I realize, and people already took me to task online in the forums about, like, well, it doesn't matter what the definition of the word is. Okay, so I guess it's a semantics thing as well. So let me just reduce it then to this. I don't feel like I need to hang a name board around me of any sort to validate what I do. I just want, you know, like, if you guys like what we do, then you'll listen to it and pay attention. And if you don't, then you won't. And I hate to feel like I need to reach out and say, "Oh, I'm an X. You know, I'm a whatever."
I mean, was this discussion kind of sparked by when in Europe they ran the story about Borderlands 2, which was there's this huge,
that
like,
was
there
exactly
is no,
what, that
there
was
is a, no Borderlands 2.
That's
how
exactly
dare
what
you?
It was sparked by.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Randy, like
yeah, I mean, working at a publisher now and like having been a journalist, I see, like, the idea that they have to like say, "Oh no, there's no Borderlands 2," and like say that those guys running that story were doing shoddy, quote, shoddy journalism.
Which is ridiculous.
That response is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, like, I understand having to like protect the brand and like you have your plan for your reveal and everything, but, yeah, you don't want to call names. You don't want to like disparage people for finding out that you're going to announce a game, you know?
Exactly. I mean, the other side that is kind of bizarre though is that in the sort of business that we're in, anything that is leaked is basically someone divulging trade secrets that they shouldn't. I mean, there's no like, you're not going to go down to you're not going to go down to Gearbox and sniff around Gearbox's office. Well, I guess you could. I guess you actually could. You could go down to Gearbox's office, go through the trash, watch the place, see what they're working on.
Gardner, when you go to developers, we would look at the walls. We would look for things.
Right.
Once in a while, you would see something. You'd see something.
Someone leave a piece of art out. Of course. But the vast majority of the time, what we think of now in the world of leaks are so-and-so told Outlet X that what they were like, someone left someplace, they were disgruntled, so they showed them some concept art, or they left some play, or they think they're going to help out their game, so they talk to somebody about something. And in the end, really, it is that like someone inside a company is divulging product secrets they shouldn't. But that doesn't mean us. I mean, hey, if we get it divulged to us, of course we're going to cover it.
But, you know, I think at the end of the day, what the real issue is, do the people paying attention to games journalists really want journalism and analysis and scoops and expert opinions, or are they more interested in the screenshots and the scores and finding out that there's a new Call of Duty?
There's audience for both. And you're right. And I guess, and again, mea culpa is that part of it is that I enjoy being enthusiast about games and evangelical about games. And I just hope that people who like listen to the show and read what we write likes it.
I will say I really don't have this conversation, but the only thing that I will say about it is, if you look at GamePro when John Davison was running it, when I worked with him, versus what it is now, it's very different. There was a whole idea of, let's go beyond those screenshots, let's go beyond the game and find out who is making this stuff. And then when John left,
that's even another sort of reporting, or not even reporting, that's another sort of coverage, and I don't... It doesn't matter what you call it. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter what you call it. So I give up my point to like talking about journalism per se, but it doesn't matter what we call ourselves if you guys read it.
I call it my fucking job.
Yeah. And then the other – exactly. And then the other thing was, of course, the Diablo 3 rant that I got into last week. And
what's this?
What's that? Garnet doesn't want people auctioning off their items to each other.
Yeah. So just to like quickly and coherently articulate a few points. One of the reasons that I got worried about like what other people do is that part of the reason that I do this is because I do love gaming and want to share that enthusiasm with other people. And yet, the thought to me of people who I think haven't ever played a Diablo because it missed such a long generation between how long it's been since it was out last time, not having the, you know, having that door so wide open to them missing one of the most fun part of the games does bug me.
The appreciation.
I've been thinking about this a lot this week. And can I kind of go to a tangential argument
for
brief detour? Because as a younger man, I mean, I grew up.
You are a young man. You're a dashing young man.
But I was younger once. And I grew up with games and cared for them deeply, even at a young age, covered them at a young age. And I grew up at a very young age before the internet. And I remember a very specific time when Game Facts came into existence and feeling very similar to how you feel about this Diablo 3
idea. That's interesting. Because of the cheat codes and stuff.
Because having walkthroughs, having all of that laid out just right there, like the temptation to when even the tiniest bit of frustration happens or the tiniest impediment to me completing Ocarina of Time or whatever it is.
Pre-Game Facts, did you not call a Nintendo Gameplay Counselor?
I remember
Speed
purchasing
Dial 2.
I remember purchasing the hint book for King's Quest
a yellow highlighter. Yeah. I mean, it was harder to get to those hints. Couldn't just put them in Google. But
exactly. And it wasn't so immediate, so right there, and so laid out for you.
Yeah.
And I remember being upset at my roommate at the time when we were in college, when he would turn to Game Facts just so quickly. And I'd be like, dude, the fun is getting stuck and figuring out.
I agree.
The idea that I would maybe take longer to go through something and feel like I had a richer experience than someone else.
Yeah.
I feel like you're cheating yourself, so I'm also pissed.
The idea that I could just buy all the best equipment, that pisses you off.
Well, I think that's what's happening to Garnet. Right?
And to clarify, it doesn't piss me off. It just makes me like, this is what I love doing, and I really want to share that enthusiasm with people, and it makes me feel like, but you have such an opportunity. And I guess part of the problem is that I really think that, like, after playing it, Diablo 3 is on point. Like, it is Diablo. It has the Diablo magic. It's totally clicking the way it's supposed to.
A lot of clicking.
And then that's funny. But I mean, and then by opening this door, I feel like, well, you know, I understand. Like, I read the arguments. Yes, there are people who have busy lives, and I appreciate that. And you know what? I think the first time I ran through Diablo 2, it took me several weeks to get through.
Are you upset that they're facilitating cheaters? Is that it?
I don't necessarily call it cheating.
What's the difference between you going out and buying packs of baseball cards or a rich dude going to the shop and buying the card he wants? Like,
this is why the magic argument came up last time.
Well, because all cards are purchased in that mentality. So you're simply paying a premium. But
you have to earn the card you want by buying lots of packs. You know, like,
but you're still just buying. You're buying and collecting.
You can skip to the end and get the thing you want if you're willing to spend more money. And most things are like that in life. Willing to spend more money, you can get it more easily.
But if you skip to the end of this, you're defeating part of the game.
With your money, you're skipping it. You're like, that's like the premium. Like, I don't have to do
that. And so that's where my concern for the love of the game kicks in, because you're missing the point of the game. The point of the game, like, clicking mouse buttons on enemies is really not that good of a game mechanic.
To be honest, what's cool about that
game mechanic is knowing all of the pieces that you put together in your gear and all of the way you spec your character and why you're able to beat that mob of monsters that's in front of you, not just clicking on them. Because the clicking on them part really, you know, they're way better combat games.
That is why I don't think that the excuse of, well, I know you're busy so you can go buy that shit. Like, the game's not going to delete itself over time. I mean, even if you're busy, you can go back and play the game any way you want. I will say, unlike Jeff, I grew up, and I've talked about this before, I grew up and my family didn't have a lot of money, so what I would end up doing, because I didn't have consoles.
Unlike Richie Pants over here.
No, I mean, let me finish the sentence
when he rode his little train through his living room past his arcade.
I would save my money because we didn't have consoles, and I would buy strategy guides for games and read about the games because we couldn't afford what it was like to play the game.
That's kind of awesome/sad.
It is. That's what happens when you grow up poor. Thank you to all the poor people that Shane apparently hates. So,
but dude, I didn't play Chrono Cross, but I read the Brady Guide.
So when I actually got to play the game, I kind of felt like I appreciated it because I wanted to see if it was the same way that I imagined it. So unlike what you were saying, how you would get mad about people going to GameFAQs immediately, I have the opposite attraction to it, I guess. The thing with Diablo
interesting,
is I don't care about this system. I don't think it's a good idea. But at the same time, is someone else making that decision going to affect me? No, so I don't give a shit.
And so that argument is fairly accurate, except that I do feel like it devalues that for everybody's enjoyment. Someone made an argument in the Shaq News comments I thought was very good about climbing Mount Everest.
Right.
And if they'd put an elevator into climbing Mount Everest, then after you've climbed to the top of Mount Everest, how silly do you feel like when someone does that? Ding, and they get off the elevator.
That's you getting pissed off at someone, flashing their E-peen.
But
and
it's
then...
not even getting pissed off. It's more just it's more like they just took the wind out of your sails.
Well, I mean, the guy who buys the level 80 Shadow Lord on eBay for WoW, and suddenly, having never ever played any WoW, I have the best character in the game. I mean, that's clearly the ultimate extreme example of this. Mm-hmm. But
and it happens a ton.
That doesn't detract from your enjoyment.
One thing I thought was really funny. It does actually detract from my enjoyment.
It kind of does.
WoW, where you're playing with those people, and if you see a guy like that, you're going to be like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, and then this guy obviously has no idea what's going on. In Diablo, totally different situation.
Well, you're right. You're right, as long as I only play in a vacuum in my own single-player game. Now, if I play multiplayer, it changes things.
With
your friends, and at the end of the day, though, the other thing it does, if you're talking about the economy side of it, is it does concern me how it will undercut the in-game auction house and the in-game economy in that was a big part of the game. And hey, look, I don't know why people suddenly thought I was me and Milky played so much freaking Diablo 2.
He's playing it again.
He's playing it again. He's hardcore because I played it again 3 years ago and it was pretty rough then. And yeah, I know all about how people are buying this stuff. I realized, I even acknowledged that last week. I said, yeah, if I'm Blizzard, I get it. There are multi-million dollar industries going on based off people buying and selling this stuff. However, I'm not sure how much of that is it becomes a big difference between someone saying, well, if you go on eBay, it's like you can go down the alley here.
Yeah, well, by facilitating if you go down the alley, they're endorsing it.
Yeah, and so it's going to be much more rare. I mean, obviously, it's endorsed.
That is actually a very
good
point that I didn't really think about, because that was a problem in Diablo 2, but rather than try to find a solution, they've sort of co-opted it for their own.
Yeah, why not
thing?
Make right. a little percentage off? I mean, yeah. I think I said this and the announcement of the $500 DLC for Gun Brothers.
That was crazy.
I mean, those two things happening the same week. But it shows us where it's going. It's showing the service-based, the service-based gaming economy of the future, where people, where it's been commoditized. They're how can you get money out of the user over time?
And especially in these loot-driven games, I think it could have a very big impact on the in-game economy. Because a big part of that, so I understand there's a lot of weapons. You might get a great orange drop, but you can't use it because it's not your character class. Well, I really feel like now that's going to almost always go to the monetary side of the auction house. Whereas, my hope would be that it becomes part of the in-game auction house and the in-game economy. And I'm not sure that's going to happen. We'll see how it pans out. Those are my concerns. That's laid out. And yes, I got a little frustrated about it.
You seem very even-keeled about it today.
I told you, blood pressure medication.
Like, all calm.
He's restrained.
I'm all restrained. All right, so let's talk about some other stuff. Let's start off, since we talked some about Japanese games, let's take a little detour for a second into Catherine. Because we talked about Catherine last week, and this will be a quick one. This one comes from Master Jones 63, but I thought this was an interesting insight. It's been really irking me hearing on podcasts about the confusion of Catherine's moral choices. The morality system is not based on good versus evil. It's based on law versus chaos. It's to be looked at as...
It's very D&D.
It is. So we look at it as, are you a committed, settled-down person, or are you more an independent sort and don't want to be tied down?
Now I'm thinking about drawing Catherine in my Trapper Keeper for some reason.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think there's some truth to that, sure. But the one that I keep coming back to is, what's more cheating, emotional cheating or physical cheating?
Mm-hmm.
And that both. Emotional cheating is the moral good that they... Mm. tell you, and physical cheating is the moral bad. Wow, what is
that? So I think the counter argument that would be made, though, is that you aren't being necessarily just true to your pure thought. You're applying the societal norms that you think are the way things ought to be to which one's good or bad. Because maybe it isn't. Aren't they both cheating? How could one be
good? I agree. That's what my point. In the game, when I select one or the other, it says bad. Good.
That's what he's saying. Is it's not necessarily saying bad. It's saying it's like which way are you leaning? Are you leaning?
What does it actually say?
Order
in the game?
Or chaos?
Does bad. It say bad or good?
It says good and bad, right?
So
it says bad.
It does say that. There's a lot of sheep.
Yeah. Have you played the Catherine at all?
I started it and I've been really busy these last 2 weeks, but I'm stoked that it's doing so well.
What difficulty did you start it on?
The default is easy, right?
Yes.
I switched it to the next one up.
You should probably put it on easy.
I went on
really?
Normal too, and I couldn't.
Well, and I've heard it's easy to get railroaded into a bad ending based on just the decisions you would make being yourself. So I'm kind of predicting that.
I explained this in the comments thread, but for anyone who hasn't read the comments, my complaint with the block pushing game is primarily a function of the controls feeling clunky.
Yes.
With a time constraint on it.
Agreed 100%.
I like the logic part of it. The logic part of it was having fun because it actually does a really cool job of teaching you the different moves because at the end of each landing.
You want to know some, what is it?
That's
kind of
cool.
That's
kind of cool. They like teach you like the
techniques.
Secret techniques. They teach you like the techniques. And so that's cool. And then you can go and apply them. It's great to know those techniques. If I can't get the game to do them the way I want to,
dude,
while the time's clowning down on me, that's a problem.
That's why Rapunzel is the best part of the game.
You know, someone disagreed with you. They said
really?
That the fact that it has limited number of moves makes it more stressful for them. So it, obviously,
maybe.
Your mileage may vary.
So you got so frustrated, you gave up, right? You're done. You're done with the puzzles.
You know what? It's I was playing that on my own time, and my rule on my own time games now is two strikes, you're done. Yeah. Like fool me once. Okay, I'll put it down. I'll wait a while. I'll come back with a fresh head. I did all that. I came back. I'm like, you know what? I get it. I'm having fun with I like the idea of the puzzles, but like fighting the controls, I don't want to do that. Sorry, guys. There are too many good games.
Won't be fooled again.
So let's talk about these handhelds coming up. Where should we kick off this conversation? Because I think it started a couple weeks ago
with 3DS Insanity.
With the 3DS Insanity, huge, like virtually unprecedented, although people did bring up some examples of consoles that have taken dramatic price.
Not a Nintendo console.
Not a Nintendo console by any stretch of the imagination. So huge price cut on the console, an appeasement program for anyone who's bought it with the ambassador program.
Ambassadors, we all are.
Are you an ambassador?
Are we all? No.
I ambassadored up last night.
It expires today, so
but
if
it's
you're
already
hearing
expired.
This now,
it's already
expired.
Yeah. Evidently, all you had to do was turn it on because I didn't see, like, login or anything special.
Well, no, if you go to the store, the eShop, it'll send you a little message confirming that you are an ambassador.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. I checked last night.
All right, so let me sum it up. MYSSSSS put it like this. Amazing what a difference a week makes. This was last week. 3DS was barely treading water, and now it's walking into a holiday unopposed with a great price and a great lineup. The Vita missing this holiday season is huge for Nintendo.
That's what I said last week. Yeah, I think it's a misstep to have the Vita miss this holiday season. It's sad.
Well, they had to choose their battles, and I think Japan, where PSP is very strong, it makes most sense to go there first.
Oh, well, I mean, especially if you can
only
have limited.
Yeah, if you can only get it to one territory, I think they made the right choice.
And Nintendo, I mean, they're poised to do really well. They have Mario Kart coming out in November. They have the new Super Mario Brothers game coming out in December.
Yep. Super Mario 3D Land, the greatest title ever.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Mario Kart 7 is what it's called right now.
They can't see your snide look, Shane. You have to explain the
terrible title.
It is a bad title.
Anyway.
And
3D Land.
But then the counter argument of that was that Star Fox has not apparently been doing very well in Japan. I hadn't seen
it. It's sold about 40,000 units in Japan.
So
Star Fox has always been bigger in the West than in Japan.
Okay, so they've got that. And then someone said that they thought that the Mario game was not that great. The camera angle was weird. It was focusing on...
Last time I was on the show, after E3, we're all a little down on it. I think it's not quite what we wanted. I'm still going to buy it. I'm hopeful that it's awesome.
But you can't question Mario Kart on handhelds because Mario Kart has just blown out.
You know, it's a little weird that it's being...
It's got wings.
...partially developed by Retro, but they're good. So
look at their track record.
Yeah, yeah. So,
come on.
I don't know. You know, I'm on
Donkey
board.
Kong was fantastic.
I'm on board for both those. But I'll say, okay, as the guy who works at a publisher here, the fact that in one fell swoop, Nintendo lowered the price of this console by $80, announced that their two biggest franchises are hitting within 3 weeks of each other, and if you already bought one, hey, here's 20 of the best games ever made for you over the next 12 months. As a third party, like that doesn't necessarily make you excited that your games are going to sell more copies.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, hasn't that always kind of been the problem with the Nintendo platform? The DS, not really. Not as much as the Wii.
Right.
But the 3DS, especially with the
You always have to compete with Nintendo.
Of course.
You know that. You know, going on to any Nintendo Nintendo platform that they make the best games. They make Mario, they make Pokemon, they make Zelda. But they don't usually give them away for free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't ship their two best franchises within 3 weeks.
And 20 games. I mean, as an ambassador, on my license plate. I am actually happy about it.
Diplomatic immunity. Dude, it's like Yoshi's Island and the Mario 3 for Game Boy and all these great games. You know?
Metroid Fusion
that comes out next week.
Yeah.
So excited.
You know what? The funny thing, though, the most telling thing about 3DS was, number one, to get the ambassador program, I had to take two massive updates because it's been that long. First of all, I had to plug the 3DS in because it was absolutely dead.
Well, it dies in one day, even if you have it on sleep mode. And that's the other question.
Okay.
Clearly, the battery life has to be addressed. And we were kind of hoping that maybe they would subtly address it this year, but it doesn't look like it.
Then I had two big updates because it's been so long since I used it. And I continue to look at that thing and I seriously wish, and I know, especially after my little iPad lesson, I know that I don't really need to go buy another handheld, but I really kind of wish I had a DSi XL.
I was just going to bring that
up. I wish I had a DSi XL.
Literally at this edition
today. Why have they not lowered why is it still $170?
It's the same price. Yeah.
It's still $170.
I was at this edition today, and there happened to be some little kids around, and this little girl had an XL.
They're huge.
And awesome. It was bigger than her head.
Riccardi has one.
It's enormous.
I
love it.
So I bought one, too. The screens are colossal. I've used it three times. You know, like with 3DS,
But it looks great, doesn't it?
It does. The
screens would drop, what would, you know what? I was thinking about, so it's $170 right now, and I was
it
looking.
It needs to be, $120, yeah.
I think if it was $120, I think I'd buy one. I'd buy one and I'd buy
But it's kind of a dead system.
But there's so much good stuff for it.
But your 3DS can
look at how 3DS can
play all that stuff.
Yeah, but the problem is I don't want to look at it on those screens.
The 3DS has a brighter screen,
but the
XL is a bigger screen. Anyway, but I think the biggest problem for me with 3DS is there still aren't enough games. Clearly.
Right.
I've played more of Find Me than anything else.
And even Mario Kart and Mario aren't enough games for me. I mean, I'm not excited about Mario Kart. That's just, I'm not a Mario Kart guy.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Mario. Yeah. I am. I liked it at E3. I thought I had fun. I love the little nods to Zelda in it.
It's true.
Super cool. But
okay, the other thing is some analyst came out this week saying that the price of software needs to come down on 3DS, and it probably does. I think
$40
seems high.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does.
So what do you think is going to happen
Last week, Awada, we talked about this, talked about how software sales were one of the major factors of the system having sluggish sales.
Yeah.
And Reggie just said the exact same thing, including the eShop channel being launching too late. That was a big problem for their digital market. But they both brought up the price of smartphone games in both of those things.
The race to the bottom. Yeah.
And then not being a big deal. It was actually a really weird argument because we had it in news last week. He's like, it's not a big deal. But we're going to talk about it in reference to our you're doing both things.
Meanwhile, the Pokemon company owned fully by Nintendo released a free Pokemon game for Android and iOS in Japan. I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah. Did you not see? And then there was a report that their stock price went up because they thought that they were going to start releasing Android games. And then they announced that they weren't going to and their stock price went back down.
And the crazy thing is, you brought up Final Fantasy Tactics on iOS and $16 and everybody is screaming from the hills. $16 is on a Nintendo or a Sony platform, that would be $40.
$40,
right. Yeah.
So there's been some conjecture then we're talking about the 99-cent sort of game, that would be one of the potential saviors of the Vita. What do you think is going to happen with Vita when it comes out? Are they reliant on these little bite-sized games?
No.
Okay.
In fact, the price of software for Vita in Japan is, I believe, going to be higher than the price for 3DS software in Japan.
Really?
Yes.
It's going to be comparable, I think, to console.
And one of the things that's interesting is because when I was over in Kyoto a couple weeks ago is 3DS software is a little more variable in pricing there.
Yeah.
Some of the titles are even more expensive. There was at least one that I think was over 50,000.
Well, yeah, I mean, when Square releases a game for PSP or DS,
it was 50 something thousand.
It's $80 still in Japan. I mean, it really is. You can still get a lot for media in Japan compared to the West. It's true.
So I guess we kind of dismissed that. A couple of the commenters, I think, who thought we were going to be on that, Chazter said, why would a 99-cent developer bother to develop games for the Vita? iOS install base is already past 50 million and counting. iPad and Android is growing. In addition, Vita caters to gamers. Why should they bother for folks who find 99-cent games, quote, not as good as the games on my original
Game Boy? The Vita there's PlayStation, there's minis right now.
Minis.
There'll be something similar to that for Vita, but I think Sony's going to try to police it more carefully to make sure there's a big divide between those games and the games you're paying full price for.
You know what Nintendo needs to do is police their eShop channel so I'm not constantly being offered fucking alarm clocks and all this other calculator bullshit.
Yeah.
You know who had the best summary of this entire thing was Penny Arcade had a comic, I think, a couple of days ago where, Gabe and Tycho are arguing about price of software. And I think Tycho says to Gabe that, I buy one $40 game for my 3DS, and it's an amazing game, and there was a bunch of shitty games on the App Store. And Gabe says, well, I'll buy 40 $1 games, and you buy your one $40 games, and we'll see who has more fun. And that is actually a very good point.
So what do you think happens with Vita, then, when it comes out? It's coming out this fall in Japan,
holiday,
spring.
Holiday in Japan.
Okay, it's coming out holiday. That's what I meant. You know, the holiday season in Japan this year, first part of next year in North America and Europe. Obviously, it's going to be $249, $299 for the 3G version in America. So it's, you know, at the old 3DS and above price point.
Which I think is fine for that platform.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think happens with it when it comes out here?
Well, clearly there's no game on any handheld device that looks as good as Uncharted.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happens after that? Because that always comes up. But then what else after that? Because the rest of the titles we've seen run a gamut of the kind of stuff you expect to see at a launch. And then some creative stuff. There's Sound Shapes, which looks absolutely stunning and awesome.
Looks awesome. I mean, and like, you know, Hot Shots Golf, sure, we've all played it like 20 times, but it is a good game.
It is a good game.
You know, like, you know,
I agree.
And like, I would pick that up if it's a really good version of it. Sound Shapes looks good. Uncharted looks good. Wipeout looks amazing. I'm a huge Wipeout fan.
And the connection with the PS3 version's awesome.
Yeah. And like, you know, the game that we're doing, Dragon's Crown, the fact that it also has the cross-platform play where like two guys could be playing on Vitas and two guys could be playing on PS3. I mean, I think that kind of stuff is new, and you know, there's some new and exciting stuff. The touchscreen, it isn't just another PSP. There is new stuff here.
I'm buying one.
Like the Nier stuff, like, you know, the location-based GPS use stuff. They haven't really explained all of that yet, but I think there's a lot of potential there, especially in Japan where everyone's really close together, to use that stuff in a unique way, kind of like Street Pass and Spot Pass.
How is that going to work without the 3G model?
It can work if you're on Wi-Fi, if you're not on the 3G model.
Okay, all right.
Is a back touch a non-starter? Does that not matter at all?
No, I think it does matter. I think I'm excited about what we can do in games with back touch.
I mean, Sound Shapes relies on it.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
Is very cool in Sound Shapes. Yeah. And the I just forgot the name of it. The one that's all the mini games where you like grab stuff inside the environment.
The name
it's the Sony's. Anyway, yeah,
Little Rascals.
Little Deviants. Has a lot of
love the alfalfa character in that. Is amazing.
Well, and I think we'll see back touch showing up on other like people's devices in the future, like a phone with back touch.
Yeah,
cool.
That would make sense. So Shane, we'll remember this. You know, obviously you guys, well, we'll all remember this. But back in the day, consoles always came out first in Japan.
Yeah.
And this is and you know, this was something actually that Daniel Fate asked on Twitter about with regard to Catherine. Like, did it help Catherine that it came out first in Japan and got some buzz going for abroad? Now, I don't know if that still works, but I think that certainly played an advantage to a lot of systems previously. Could Sony be thinking, hey, we bring this thing out in Japan this fall, we let it get a little foothold there, then there's sure to be some first adopters in North America that are like the guy who looks at that thing and says, wow, this is amazing, OLED screen, back touch, I got to have it now. He imports it, shows it to his friends at the bar, whatever. Do you think they're working in that space and thinking about that way?
I don't know. I feel like global launch is greater than local launch when it can be done.
Okay.
I think they want to get it out, but I think it's limited by ability.
Yeah,
at this point.
But I think, you know, PSP software sales are gangbusters in Japan, and they're like, you know, gang warfare everywhere else. So clearly, they went to the place where there are millions of people who like PSP.
Yeah, that word of mouth stuff works for something like the Apple iTunes Store, where you find a 99-cent game that works and you tell your friends about it, and that gains some traction. But I don't know about a $300 system doing the same kind of thing.
All right, well, we'll get some more feedback from you in the comments section to this show. It's going to be a very interesting Tokyo Game Show with the launch of the system coming up not long after the middle of September. So we should see a lot of games there. They'll have a lot of Vita hands-on there. I'm looking forward to playing around with that. Can't deny I'm also looking forward to Last Guardian. Has to be there.
I remember a year ago.
It'd
be at TGS.
When it's done.
So, Shane, I have a special musical treat for you today. You know, Ryan, who did the videography for us, has been working on a video. It was with Oddball of the Less More Collective, and this is called Fame, and yes, it does sample David Bowie.
Nice.
Yeah. Your prison of fame slow. The game don't give it away, so I became more gritty and game flow. City of angels, ain't no pity in praying. Though my halos hit it and hangs low. I spit with a stained soul and stayed so different. I changed clothes. The game don't fit me, the frame's bold. I bring in my way home. Came close, missing it straight. So I'm lifting my aim and I'ma hang on. This is my fame song. Game on, kicking in play zone. Stick to the same brain the day on. Dang, the wait's long. Stay calm, just the mistakes don't give them a break that they can hate on. There's no debate on the way strong. Written should rate. Go on, figure the pace that you should stay on. And lay your taste strong. Great songs lifting the legs. I'm one away, better keep my game face on. What comes first? The thirst or the hunger? The curse of the wordsmith hurts when it hunts ya. And what's worse? The fame or the failure? The game or the player? The pain or what ails ya? I couldn't tell ya, but I know what. If it wasn't for this micro that I hold clutch, then I'd go nuts. And that's why I write so much. Cause you never know when you might blow up. Yeah, never know it. Cause you never know when you might blow up. Yeah. Fame fades fast, wait last minute and you may get passed by face mask image and paydays lag. My name tag's tinted, so if they say rap, I'm a ASAP spit it. Make that spinach, the game may crash, so I save my stacks, though it ain't that many. I'm way past winning, this laid back rap cup with Ajax cracks what the game lacks in it. But ain't shit funny, but your late mid-20s dead broke trying to make this money. And every time shit gets running, I get set back some, and then the rent's due, that check's coming, and that there's some. The strength of a crash test dummy. I'ma take that path and rap for less money. Then make that back and act like it's nothing through the math. Less is more, my time's coming. What comes first? The thirst or the hunger? The curse of the wordsmith hurts when it hunts ya. And what's worse? The fame or the failure? The game or the player? The pain or what ails ya? I couldn't tell ya, but I know what. If it wasn't for this micro that I hold clutch, then I'd go nuts. And that's why I write so much. Cause you never know when you might blow up. Yeah, never know it. Cause you never know when you might blow up. Never know.
Very funky use of the fame sounds there. You like that, Shane? What do you think?
I loved it.
All right, that is Oddball of the Lessmore Collective. We will have all the details on that track in the show notes. And also, Ryan did the video for it. You should check it out. He did also, it's like, has this really cool pyrotechnics thing that they did, like, in their garage with gasoline.
That's always a good plan.
It's very cool. It's very cool film. Yeah, Ryan doing some very cool video work on that. And now it's time to turn the mics over to the man with the iPad at the end of the other side of the booth here to do.
You were going
to
say table, but there's no table.
I did. Like, oh, there's no table.
An invisible table.
There's no table. The invisible tableau, Mr. Zav Damatos and Newsy News.
So we have the MPD numbers just came out, and that's why I stole Garnet's iPad so I can actually check them out. But before we start with that, the MPD is actually now going to be tracking data for European countries.
That's great news.
Beginning with the UK, Germany, and France initially, and then later down the line they're going to open it up to Asian markets as well. This gives them a better foothold to actually provide data to publishers. I'm sure you deal with them on a regular basis.
We do.
I'm sure they give you numbers. They don't give us numbers anymore.
But he said bitterly.
You know, not just me. There are people. I remember going to NeoGAF and those MPD numbers would come out.
I will say it's awesome to get like the life-to-date list with like PS1 games on them. You're like, I wonder what that crazy game. Oh, interesting. That stuff's fun.
Are you
that
serious?
Is kinda cool. Yeah, it's all
that
on
sounds,
there.
That's,
you know what's weird, though, about the – like
someone is now trying to hack your email.
The whole weird thing about like we're not giving out numbers anymore is that now individual publishers will give out individual numbers for games they feel like this number was good or they want to cite how bad this number was. And so it's very hit or miss now. So you get more fine detail on things you didn't used to get, but you don't get what you wanted, which is the top 10.
Right. And books and movies and music, those numbers get released to the public. So it is kind of frustrating. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we had this conversation when we were talking about NPD getting moving to Europe, me and you, Garnet, where we were talking about how the companies that do well are the only ones that really ever produce numbers. Like Microsoft always talks about, oh, our system sold this or this or that. Nintendo typically does not release numbers until their quarterly reports. That's how we found out that Zelda sold a million and Street Fighter shipped a million. That was what Capcom did during their quarterly report. And like Sony never releases their numbers either because they're lagging behind a little bit until they do well. And then that's when we start getting that data. So It's a little frustrating. Also, last week, analysts were saying that they were expecting substantial decline in July, up to 27% year on year. So I have the iPad here. NPD numbers are out, and the industry has dipped 26% in North America.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
But, you know, the whole economy. Yeah, like I saw a thing earlier how, like, home video sales are down like a crazy percent, even including downloads, even including streaming. Like,
and
still down.
It ain't getting better, folks.
My concerns will only rise if after Modern Warfare 3 and Battlefield 3 and whatever else we want to add to that super top tier list. What else should we add to
that?
Well,
I will say Modern Warfare 3.
If Madden doesn't
do well.
Modern
Warfare 3 might not beat Blops first day just because there's more competition this year. So we'll see. You know, Black Ops had the biggest day ever yet, but, like, you know,
yeah,
there's
but
more competition.
But then it has the Modern Warfare name going for
it's
it, which
true.
I think you could argue might be better than Call of Duty, especially Call of Duty Black Ops, because Black Ops sounds like an offshoot.
Right.
I think Modern Warfare 3 is going to be.
It'll beat it? All right.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see.
Zav's going to go to the special Call of Duty XP Expo.
Oh, you're going
to
play paintball in the recreated level?
Which apparently it takes place on a pile of dirt across the street from my apartment.
Convenient.
Now people know where you live.
Guys, Garnet was like, hey, you're going to go to that Call of Duty XP thing. It's like across the street from your building. And I said, there's a giant pile of dirt across the street from my building. He's like, yeah, it's there.
Exactly.
That's a level everyone's been asking for.
Giant pile of dirt, one. All right, NPD numbers. Of course, we just talked about this. Microsoft was the only company that provided numbers. They were on top with 277,000 units for the Xbox 360.
That's almost half of what it sold in June.
No, I actually have
Wasn't
the
it almost 500,000 units in June? Like 496,000 units?
Do I have the numbers?
It was almost 500,000 units in
It was a bad month. And we'll specifically for a few games. So Catherine, of course, a game that came out in July, not on the top 10 list. Although...
I thought we heard numbers of like...
Let me finish. The NPD, the way that they release data, as you remember, is based on consoles, all platforms combined.
Right.
It did not make the top 10 list for the PS3 and Xbox 360 combined, although it hit over 200,000 units.
That's interesting because Shane and I know from back in the day when we did get real numbers, we talked about this all the time. 200,000 used to get you in the summertime top 10.
For sure.
Well, number one at the top is NCAA Football 12, which is what analysts were predicting.
Right, it's a huge bellwether franchise.
Yeah, no surprise.
Everything else is stuff that we've seen on the list before. Mortal Kombat, Fallout,
Just Dance 2?
Just Dance 2 is number five.
Yes.
Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, which came out on every platform known to man. I think my toaster has a version that came out on it.
The DS version is the best-selling version.
Is that the toaster that has the spinning wheel of death in there?
Yeah, and the exploding ball. Nice callback there, Mr. Kanata. But everything else is...
That's a hard reset right there.
is old stuff that's come out over the past couple of weeks. So it's a little surprising because Atlas themselves were really talking about how it did very well for them, and not to see it on this list is a little surprising.
Well, I think, like what Garnet was saying, I think that if everything else in the top 10 sold more than 200,000 units, that's pretty good.
Or maybe they were citing shipped in and not sold in.
Wait a minute.
I think that they were probably citing
shipped in. I think we just had a very collective brain fart. When was Catherine released? Was it released July or August?
Catherine came out on July 26th. It only had 4 days of sales, and that 200,000 probably was shipped in. Because those units are sold to retailers, you know.
So that
as far as they're worried, they're sold.
Yeah,
I mean, they might have taken some write backs.
Right, I would like to see what hopefully that game does show up on the NPD. Also, remember last year in July, StarCraft II came out.
Yes,
so that was
that's why it's down 20%.
That was a huge thing. Yeah. And then analysts were also saying that in August there's only one game they expect to do very well, which is Madden. Although Deus Ex is also coming out in August. So
I remember last year when we were here for the show talking about the StarCraft numbers, we were all surprised by how well it had done at boxed retail because we were like at that time
it's Blizzard, man.
NPD was. But they did such a push with BNet and such a push with digital sales, and their storefront is
very
good.
Which means it did even better.
Oh, yeah. You know? There's no doubt about that. I mean, we know that it did fantastic. It's
if only there was a way they could sell that game to us three times.
That's a good idea.
Wait a minute.
Maybe they could offer an auction house in there where you could buy and
sell. I remember like many years
links.
Ago on a previous podcast, I think it was Garnet defending splitting StarCraft 2 into three games. Like
what?
All the crazy Blizzard fans are like, yes, thank you for giving me more game. I look forward to spending $100 on each limited edition.
Well, you know, as it worked out,
it's probably going to be awesome.
As it worked out,
of course it'll be awesome.
The campaign is game size campaign. The multiplayer hasn't been undercut any. So far they've executed on it. I think it will be challenging for them to continue to make the multiplayer piece feel like it's worth a full game purchase.
When will StarCraft II Part 3 ship?
Possibly
what year?
Possibly before Half-Life 3.
I think Half-Life 3 should be like 100 episodes.
100 episodes.
It's like a trades.
Year, an annual episode.
I like it.
Gordon Freeman is 78.
I'm still fighting aliens.
It would be really funny, actually, if they did it like as a flashback from after the end of the Half-Life saga, and he's like telling the story to his grandkids or whatever. Yeah.
But he's doing it with sign language because he doesn't speak. Because
he doesn't speak.
Yeah. Moving on, Assassin's Creed Revelations multiplayer beta is coming to the PS3 in September. From September 3rd into the 11th, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber or Uplay member, that's of course Ubisoft's own digital service, or you could sign up for their games if you have, I think they give you some free content if you actually unlock achievements within their own little system.
So the beta is not on 360?
Beta was said to be timed exclusive only. September 3rd to the 11th coming out for the PS3. Now, if you remember back, we actually wrote a story about how Ghost Recon and Assassin's Creed split platforms. So the Ghost Recon beta was going to go to the 360. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood went to the PS3. Ghost Recon, people are still waiting for that thing to come out. We already had that conversation. But Assassin's Creed Revelations, do you think – the reason why I put this in here is, do you think that the multiplayer component of this game is different enough in comparison to how, you know, original Brotherhood was to entice people into wanting to play the multiplayer of Revelations?
I don't know if it has to be different, but I think it's interesting enough that I'm enticed. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I would love to hop into that beta and play a little more.
I would say the answer is, I think a lot of people would just say, oh, no, it's not. And then the gamble is, have you established with Brotherhood that we can do something that's unique and interesting and you should play it? You should get into it from the onset instead of hearing about it from somebody else and then deciding, oh, I should go play it. Yeah. You know, get it. Like, I think that's the gamble is, yeah, we can do something interesting. So hop into Revelations right off the bat and play it and have a good time with it instead of hearing about it from somebody else and feeling like you've missed the boat and getting onto the train halfway down the road.
And I think as an exclusive on Sony, this makes more sense than like a Tom Clancy game, since at E3, Microsoft announced that every Tom Clancy game ever will have like exclusive Kinect functionality. Yeah. And, you know, I do find it weird that Splinter Cell HD Trilogy is exclusive to PS3, though. That's a little weird to me.
That is strange.
Because that franchise is more associated with Xbox.
I mean, so that whole collection is definitely just crazy. I mean, it makes no sense what's going on.
I mean,
they're
based on the PC version.
It is based on the PC version. Also, you know, it doesn't have the multiplayer stuff if you're looking for that. But it's also strange because the game is out in Europe. It's already out on the PSN. It came out last week. And it keeps getting delayed in North America. I think it's not coming out until September now. Weird. At some point. It's super strange. THQ, we've talked about how they have closed two studios recently, Digital Warrington and Chaos Studios. They've actually now closed two more. THQ has laid off around 200 employees as part of what they're calling a strategic realignment, which also includes shelving the MX versus ATV series after MX versus ATV Alive. Their experiment did not work, experiment in quotes. And that was selling a budget title with a bunch of premium content for you to customize it. Arguably, I don't even think arguably, that was a niche title to select to do
well,
that.
It didn't used to be
thing.
A niche title. I mean, that series was like a really big seller, but it's very broad, mass market, Walmart kind of game. And those people probably aren't the guys who want to spend $30 on DLC. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and not exactly the same, but I think Dirt now occupies that position in the marketplace that MXATV used to, of the off-roading crazy.
Well, and also like, MotorStorm, too.
And MotorStorm. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. MotorStorm.
And MotorStorm is more exciting. I mean, I think of MX versus ATV, it seems very simulation to me. Whereas I think if they did it with something that had more of a kick to it, like what was the BlackRock game that they created?
Player.
Pure.
Yeah, Pure was the
Pure
deal.
Was
something
Pure
like
was
that.
Really
like,
good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that game a lot.
It's a little sad because I like the idea of that experiment, because Atari did the same thing with Test Drive Unlimited, mm-hmm. Budget game with a bunch of DLC, although the second game wasn't very good.
Test Drive Unlimited was not a budget game. It was a $60 game.
No, it was
full price.
I thought it was like $39.99 when that came out, the first one.
It was full price.
Oh, I could have swore that. Okay.
But so the one developer they closed are the guys who made De Blob, and they're like Dutch, right?
The Blob guys got axed, yeah.
That's a cool game.
Blue Tongue Entertainment has been shuttered, as well as THQ Studio in Australia.
One of my best friends got moved to Montreal.
It's not a bad chaos. But that's where Patrice Delasson was making his new amazing game.
Yeah,
so
oui.
Yeah, that's it. He's on a good game.
I hope he likes French.
Nice learning.
Also, another company that's being affected by this is THQ's Digital Studios Phoenix, which is working on QA for MX versus ATV Alive as it progresses, because they're still going to be offering a lot of content. People obviously need to continue watching the game over time. But this is four studios closed and one studio basically severed in half for THQ. they're really taking their last financials.
It's tough.
A very serious situation.
Tough. And thoughts and prayers for everybody who's affected by those layoffs.
It's never cool. But I say, of all the things they've done lately, the one that surprised me the most was like their cancellation of Red Faction and kind of this haughty way they went and like, you know, as if like, you know, one game in that people didn't like as much as the previous one, suddenly they're willing to like, you know, bungle.
Take their ball and go home.
Right. And a year ago, it was like, oh, we're making sci-fi movies and we're making this a huge franchise. And how quickly they turned.
I think it's indicative more of how unstable THQ in general is. I mean, they're just in a tough spot. They're a smaller mid-level publisher, very reliant on game. You know, they're living paycheck to paycheck.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true.
They have paycheck to paycheck.
WWE is still a huge franchise. UFC is a big franchise.
They have all those kids games too, right?
Well, actually, they said they're going to go away from doing as many kids.
That's
games.
The thing. They used to be known for SpongeBob and all these Nickelodeon titles that they did. The Last Generation, especially, I remember. And they're actually reducing all of it. So all of these moves, then the reductions or the redundancies have been facilitated to reduce the movie-based games and licensed games that they are going to do in their portfolio for the foreseeable future. So they're focusing less on kids' games and going more to core titles. But then one of the franchises they own, like Shane pointed out, Red Faction, which people do love, didn't like the last one as much as the Gorilla. And they've already decided to shelve that entire franchise.
And now they've got Space Marine coming, and you know I'm worried for those guys because I think if Space Marine doesn't hit, that they'll just come through and do the same thing.
It feels generic.
I don't know.
I think
I'm not saying the game feels. I'm saying
the title.
The title is.
I don't think they've marketed. I don't think it's been marketed particularly well.
The game looks good.
Well, it hasn't been marketed at all. I haven't seen a single ad for it anywhere. To be honest with
you, I do think that THQ will have a huge hit this fall with your favorite game, Saints Row the Third. I mean, that game is going to sell gangbusters.
I find it hard to disagree with you.
Huge.
I find it hard to disagree with you about that. I don't know that I'll like it, but I find it hard to disagree.
Many will.
I think it's going to be good, dude.
I don't know that Relic will be hit very hard because they are sort of the golden child over there at THQ. I don't foresee them.
And they've done their. I mean, they've done their. They don't make misses. They need to make me a Homeworld 2.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny that you're saying that. Oh, they're moving away from licensed games going to core, but their licenses are WWE and Warhammer. It's like
licenses in terms of the kids.
No, I get what you're saying, but it's like their bread and butter.
And they also have that partnership with Guillermo del Toro. Where that game has been announced but never shown. So I mean, they have things coming.
That's not going to be shown for a long while.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
Well, the game's not even coming out until 2013. Thanks for that announcement.
That's the first game. It's a series.
Oh,
of
it's
games.
A trilogy, right?
It's a series of
okay,
games.
Awesome. I'll play the next one on my PlayStation 9. So, really interesting thing happened the other day. Warhammer. Someone on Shaq News' forums found someone on the community manager at THQ had posted that Space Marine would have co-op. And that it would be released 30 days or so after the game launches, and that if you purchase the game brand new, you'll get the content for free, even if you purchase it brand new a year later, as long as you purchase it brand new. So when we contacted THQ, unfortunately, I guess that announcement wasn't supposed to come out because that post has since been pulled, but they did confirm to Shaq News that Space Marine will have co-op. They haven't said when it's going to come or what it's going to include. So the original point of this was GameStop had released this promo saying that pre-order now and you get free co-op for Space Marine. And then the post on the forum seems to indicate that THQ, like they did with Homefront, is going to go to an online pass, which is, you know, the trend for a lot of companies. I mean, you mentioned Saints Row. That has an online pass as well. It has a season pass, actually. You get a bunch of DLC to entice you to stick with the premium stuff they're releasing later. But they're not saying exactly what Space Marine is going to include. You said that you thought the game looks generic.
No. Please, Jeff? Don't get me wrong.
Oh, you think
the name is...
Okay.
The feeling of the sort of marketing... The title, really.
But Space Marine is not generic in the context of Warhammer. Well, I mean, like, it's a big deal in Warhammer.
That's a niche audience.
Yeah, the Warhammer, like, miniature painting audience. Yeah. Like even I, who grew up like an uber nerd who played D&D, like, I'm not really into Warhammer. Come on. Like,
That's a significant audience in its world.
I'm
but
just
it's
saying, you can't change the name of the fiction.
But yeah, like,
it's,
no,
they are Space Marines.
I think it's a branding problem. I think it's a positioning problem. Okay. I think it feels
right.
They
should have known that Space Marine is the...
That's what she said. I just can't resist it.
Yeah, but Space Marine is the euphemism for Master Chief. It's everyone jokes about, oh, your game has a Space Marine in it. Like, maybe Warhammer invented putting those words together 20 years ago, for all we know. Who knows? But like, the fact is, calling your game Space Marine, a certain segment is going to think,
I see what you're saying. Oh, that's a good
point. Selling me like army dude. You know, you're telling me like,
yeah. I mean, they
gangster
do,
game.
They do hold on to it as though like this is the, you know, the originator. So even if it, other things have adopted it, we are the first. It still does not help your cause.
Yeah,
right. When, and, I gotcha. And screenshots. Well, I agree. The game looks great, but even a screenshot is like, yeah, that's a Space Marine. Yeah. You know, that's like, yeah, that's kind of what I expected by Space Marine
as advertised.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, that's a good. Damn it.
Believe me, I'm not trying to dog the game. I think it has really solid potential.
Space Marines are cool, and the Warhammer world is cool. And I think that
agreed.
I think the problem that I'm sort of distilling from this is that they need to sell the fiction mythology of Warhammer
for
to
sure.
folks outside of the Warhammer world so that they don't take it as a generic, so that they understand yes. that, yes, yes, these are Space Marines, and here's why Space Marines are cool in Warhammer, because Warhammer was around a long time before there were COGs.
Before there was World of Warcraft.
Before there was any of this stuff. Like, yeah. we were doing Space Marines, yeah. and they were here, and here's why they're cool, and here's what's cool about a Space Marine in the Warhammer world.
Yeah, the way that they really should bill it, and they don't, is that they are like the COGs without fear. I mean, they don't need no cover. You know, like, that is sort of the idea of how these are powerful machines, or
but
men
you're a
that
badass.
Are like... yeah, they're like built like machines is what I'm trying to say. And the problem is they're not really promoting the game at all. And the game,
you're
and
like
the
Kurt
name,
Russell and Soldier.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. whatever that means. So there was a report that Team Bandai, I may have already been confirmed by at this point, that is selling their IP and assets to a holding company out of Sydney, Australia.
It's a tough time for them.
Well, but it's the one that's so. Financing the new Mad Max film. And mm-hmm. the idea is that maybe yes. that they're going to have Team Bondi make a Mad Max game, right?
Yeah.
That's I didn't know that part. That's interesting.
Yeah, the original rumor
I can't
was...
wait to try to decipher whether Mad Max is telling the truth or not.
Of course, if you've been following the news on Team Bondi, there's been a lot of rumors and reports about what happened to them and their relationship between Rockstar.
Sure. There's been a ton of fallout from
that. The rumor from this that this stemmed from was that Team Bondi, Rockstar was hesitant to help Team Bondi publish their next title that they're working on, so they began to shop around their company. Mm-hmm. Although this includes their IP and assets, they do not own the L.A. Noire IP. That is actually owned right. by Rockstar Games. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, this is the same game we all played. Did you play L.A. Noire?
Didn't finish it.
Didn't finish it? I mean,
I haven't turned it on.
They have a great vision.
You never started it?
You never finished it?
Dude, it's great. Just the tech alone, you should experience
it. It's kind
of
not what you think it's going to be, also.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
Hours in the day.
That's true.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, I'm interested about Mad Max because John Davison a few weeks ago shared some pictures of the cars that they're going to use for the Interceptors.
So what year does the film come out? Is it 2014? Do you know?
I don't know.
It's just starting pre-production?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I guess Ford is doing the cars with them, and they do not look Mad Maxian. They're way too clean. They're way too sleek.
They should be all fucked up and dirty.
Yeah,
and,
like dirty and nasty. Yeah. Have like a big old supercharger sticking out the top of it. And
it's more like Speed Racer now or something?
Yeah, a little. Not quite
like
that.
Death Race 2000.
Not that shark nose, but yeah, very clean, like very futuristic lines to them. I don't know. It was.
I just hope that Tina Turner can still, you know, sing. We don't need Beyond the Thunderdome.
Welcome to Thunderdome, bitch.
We don't need another.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
It's a very musical episode, if we can confirm, by the way. We have a lot of singing going on. Hey, I added this to news because I wanted you to talk about it, Garnet,
okay.
which is Prey 2, Tommy, the original yes. hero from the first game. The game that you loved and
so
gave, what was it?
So, Prey 2 : Blade Runner, a vagina door is going to open up and Tommy the Indian wearing his headdress is going to jump out of it.
Hey, everybody, remember me?
And he's going to go, hey, how are you?
There are no sphincter doors in the futuristic Blade Runner world.
Sphincters and vaginas are quite different.
Exodus is a much nicer place. Exodus is a much cleaner and nicer place.
Although, around that one corner.
Good. So one of the things that was interesting, and when I was talking to Chris back at the Bethesda event, pre-E3, when they show this off, he knew that, you know, because I'd done the big cover story that we did on 1UP on Prey, he told me some stuff about Tommy, and they weren't ready to share it yet because they didn't want to have that become a distraction, because they're looking at this world, almost this universe, as a big canonical fiction into which they can write different stories. And there are
Oddworld.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have the collectors out there. And the collectors are doing, you know, like they're affecting all these different worlds. And the first time we saw them affecting Earth, they were affecting Tommy's part of Earth and his world. And now they're affecting, and I forget the name of the U.S. Marshal guy, because I haven't gotten his name stuck in my head yet. But the guy who's the protagonist in Prey 2 also caught up in the same thing, except by virtue of what happens when he gets trapped up on their ship, he winds up halfway across the galaxy in this other world. But that's going to allow them to start showing how this is all part of all the goings on in a much larger world than just planet Earth.
So he and Tommy are going to team up and take out the aliens back at their home base.
Turn into a buddy comedy after a while. Yeah.
Pray three.
So yes, somehow
Killian Samuels.
That's the guy on the plane in the CG movie who gets warped to Blade Runner world.
Yeah. So what happens is he's a U.S. Marshal. His plane gets sucked into the orb.
Samuels, come on.
I want to
be a fly on the wall in that meeting.
Well,
I got a few ideas for you.
Okay, but wasn't the original character named Tommy Hawk?
Is he Tommy Hawk, really?
I think it was Tommy Hawk.
That was not his final name.
I think it's a Street Fighter character.
When 3D Realms was working on him.
Oh, it was Tommy Hawk. Oh, yes, that's true.
Yes, Tommy became his nickname. Anyway, so it crashed on the thing, and then like he has a little fight, and he gets knocked unconscious, and he comes to in Exodus. And so the rest of the fiction goes that, yes, Tommy will be on Exodus, and Tommy has two functions in the game. One of them is that he brings back in – they're really shy about the – I think they're not doing portals at all. Like, I was pushing him on that. I don't think they're going to do portals at all.
They full out said there are no portals in the game.
Yeah, but they also said they weren't going to do anything with Tommy and all that kind of stuff. And his death walk and spirit walk stuff is in there. And it figures into somehow like what happens to people's essences in the world when they're like captured and all that kind of stuff. But who knows what it's going to be. And he is not. And the thing that I'm most interested about and I think is sort of up in the air is whether or not you ever get to play as Tommy.
I bet you do.
I bet you do.
At the end.
I'm feeling like you do, but we'll see what happens.
Killian's going to get into a situation. Tommy's going to have to save him with that spirit walk.
Killian is just going to make me think of Seth Killian from Capcom every time. Sorry.
Oh, that's, Killian Sanders.
Now I can remember it.
Seth Killian Sanders.
Now I'm upset that you can't do fireballs in Prey 2.
I know.
Fuck.
All right.
But Prey 2 getting a surprising amount of positive press.
Well, it looks awesome.
Well, it looks so much better than anybody expected.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's what happens when you over-deliver.
Also, people haven't been waiting for this game for 15 years.
Exactly.
Well, and you know,
there's
that's
no baggage.
You know what? That's interesting. Is that was another point that Chris casually brought up? Is that they did that game and they finished that game and they established a world, but now they get to build on that and at the same time do something that's more creative and something that's more modern and more up to date with what they're doing and not get drawn into we're just going to do a sequel to another Prey game.
I still feel like if this game came out and was called something else, it would be even more.
Well, I kind of like
people would like it more.
I kind of like the subtle tie in to you see the plane crash into the original Prey, and then this character that you play on in this one is in that plane. So you do, there is that tie to it. So I think that's cool. Originally, we didn't know that information, so totally different. Moving on, Battlefield 3. We talked about this earlier in the show.
Big story. This is probably the biggest story of the week, I think.
Not coming to Steam. EA, because they cannot control the way that Steam releases patches or DLC or how they contact their gamers, the players or the people who purchase their games, they are deciding not to release the game on Steam, instead going to go to other digital platforms, which it will be available for, as well as their own Origin. Now, today, another reason why I was glad that I checked the iPad, they confirmed that no matter where you purchase the game on any digital retailer, you will need to install Origin for the game to work.
Yay!
Not surprised.
Not surprised. And, you know, if you played the Battlefield Alpha, you'll understand how it's sort of tied in with the game. Basically, you can actually go through menus throughout within Origin as well.
So, I so hope that Origin defaults to be loaded as I turn my computer on. I hope that.
Yeah.
Running in the background all the time.
All the time.
With your heart of hearts.
Would you like some memory leaks with that? That would
be super sweet.
Well, you know what? People do hate the fact that it's not going to be on Steam, but have you ever played Battlefield Bad Company 2 on Steam? It is shit.
Really?
It's terrible.
Because of Steam?
Not because of Steam, but because I guess they can't make the updates that they want to anytime that they need to, and balance tweaks. It needs to go through a process, so they don't have as much control over it. Well, that's a totally different process. You have to go through CERT with Microsoft and Sony, who have very different ways on how they're going to approach the subject.
Yeah, and for example, for the console game, you only get a certain number of free title updates, and after that point, it's a sizable fee to release
five figures
title update.
That's insane.
Yeah. Wow.
That's great.
No,
so, you know what concerns me about this is that Steam had established itself very clearly as the PC gaming platform, right? And if we continue to go down this road of now every publisher wants control over their product and they're going to have, you're going to have to install their product underneath it, it could start to fragment and you know, start to like undermine some of the progress Steam had made in bringing PC games. There are look, Battlefield is a very big title. There will be some people who won't get it because it won't be on Steam, but the majority of people will. So now you've got another platform installed.
But to believe that like Steam is this altruistic thing that everybody support when it is a for-profit platform where the profit margins are identical to they are on Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo.
Like, dude, no argument.
Yeah, to ask EA, like, oh, you know, to be mad at them for not wanting to support a competitor's portal.
So full disclosure in that. We are owned by Gamefly. I don't really get worried about their rental business, but they just launched a digital platform.
PC
games.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's going to be interesting to see whether any of these retail fronts can make some progress, because personally, if I'm Electronic Arts or Ubisoft, and Steam's done a good job with it, but one of the complaints people have with Steam is that when you have to go to customer service, like, it's like you're handled through forums and you don't necessarily get the response as fast as you want.
Yeah.
Like selling shit to people is a pain in the ass.
Well, EA
and
has always...
There's a reason retailers are retailers. It's because retailers, the ones that are successful, get good at it. Like, people love Amazon because Amazon has a great return policy, has good responsive customer service, and handles selling shit to people well.
Right.
And I don't know, like... Valve has done a good job of some of that, and Steam, I should say, has done a good job of some of that. Maybe not so much another. Now EA is going to be doing it for themselves with Origin, and how well are they going to handle all of that? Maybe there's a space still for somehow for a retailer, whoever it is, to handle great customer service, good sales experience, and still let the publisher have that, like just let the seller sell the shit and let the people who make the game make the shit.
I agree, and I completely understand from a publisher standpoint why they would not want to, you know, support a competitor. From a consumer standpoint, the fewer that I have, the better. And
exactly,
if
you
get all my stuff in one place, if I can have the kinds of achievements and all my friends list, all those things consolidated, that's better for me as a consumer.
And when it's every publisher selling directly to you, that means that if I want my game to be on the other guy's system, I'm letting my game that I'm publishing and supporting go through someone else's publication system, which is, like, you're not going to get people to agree to that.
We're talking about them wanting to make this decision because they don't want to sell on a competing platform.
Right.
Whereas their argument, what they're saying, this is not new to them, that they want to have direct contact with their consumer. Remember back when Xbox Live
was
launched?
It's kind of the same thing, though.
Remember when Xbox Live was launched? It was EA Sports games were not on Xbox Live for a few years. Yes, it was only on PlayStation 2 because Microsoft wouldn't allow them to run their own servers. And when they made the decision to allow them to
thought that was going to be the death of Xbox Live? Remember when everybody thought,
it was the death of
Sega. Because it was the death of Sega.
Dreamcast?
Because it was the death of Dreamcast, so they carried it over. You know what? Maybe they want to touch the customer directly as far as like working with patches and that sort of stuff. But when it comes to selling stuff, somebody, like, there needs to be maybe some other solution. Anyway.
Yeah, and to wrap up the news, I just want to mention that the Humble Indie Bundle, number 3, hit over $2.1 million.
Awesome. Brilliant.
Fantastic. And also,
a lot of good games in that.
That's great.
That just came out today. Operation Rainfall, which we've talked about. Nintendo's Reggie himself said that they will be watching the European market very closely to see how Xenoblade does.
So, American Wii fans, you are now beholden to your European brethren to buy those games.
That game is really cool too. Xenoblade is an awesome game.
I've heard that. Yeah. I heard the other two maybe not as hot, but Xenoblade is pretty hot.
That's the one.
All right, folks, it's time to wrap things up with our finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Finish them, Zav.
So I've been playing, myself and a bunch of game journalists in the industry have decided, because we're in such great shape, unfortunately that shape is rotund, that we're going to play some Kinect games in order to try to get in shape. So not Fruit Ninja, we're doing the UFC Ultimate 60-Day Challenge.
That's awesome.
So we're doing that, and a couple of other game journalists who I probably won't mention. I decided that this was going to be like Operation Embarrass Myself into Action, so
that's
wanted to mention it. So then, I guess I'll update you guys on how it's going after 60 days.
Dude, I'm excited for this.
If I'm dead, it's because
I hear that UFC superstars berate you and talk bad to you.
I was doing it yesterday. I did the first one, and if you fail, it's like what you would think a UFC trainer would do if you couldn't, do a setup.
All I will say is this: best luck. And I now work out pretty regularly, and I don't know how it worked.
Put your shirt back on, dude.
I don't know how it happened like this, but it started because I started doing EA Active. And EA Active got me in the rhythm of doing it. And then like I was like, screw these resistance bands and shit. Then I thought, well, I should go back. Because now I kind of also miss that. And it's sort of P90X-ish, but I don't have space. Anyway, if it gets the routine going for you, awesome.
Yeah, and we're also, and it's not just the game, of course, and people are going to say you're playing a video game to lose weight, but we're also doing a bunch of other stuff too. So it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Shane Bettenhausen, finish him.
I'm going to pimp it out here. You know, I got to once again mention that next week on Tuesday, the 16th of August in North America, El Shaddai. Ascension of the Metatron will be shipping for the PS3 and 360. And it's something you might not know, and I was inspired by the David Bowie sample earlier.
Like, awesome.
Each of the Fallen Angels is kind of loosely inspired by a celebrity. And my favorite one in the whole game is very obviously inspired by David Bowie. And I think, you know, here and there said what one or two of the other guys are, but like I'm curious if anybody could figure out who everybody's meant to be.
Like, we're talking Labyrinth Bowie? We're talking about
it's specifically Hunky Dory era Bowie. It's like 1967 Bowie.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah. Jeff Cannata, take it away.
I got excited this week and dug out my copy of Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat!
We're starting a barbershop quartet later. because I was so excited about Freddy Krueger.
Best DLC. Like, that was announced during Comic-Con. I saw the video, and I was like, smartest thing ever.
That was the original idea. They wanted to get those horror guys in those games.
Dude, put them all in there.
I agree, dude. Should be Jason. Should be all of them.
Leatherface.
Yeah. Did you play it?
No, I watched the fatalities.
Major bummer, though, it's
really?
New Freddy. Lame
new Freddy.
Reboot Freddy.
Little skinny really? Freddy.
Little tiny
like
Freddy.
Bad News Bears Freddy. It's a total fail.
It's not the Freddy I wanted.
Robert Englund Freddy.
Robert Englund.
That's the only Freddy, thank you.
Should have been. I was hoping maybe there's a costume change unlock code for Robert Englund, but they probably didn't want to pay him.
Maybe if you speak in a higher pitched voice.
there are some really awesome things that, like, for example, his throw, you stab him, he pulls him in close and goes, shh, and
That's
then
awesome.
Stabs him. Awesome. But it's the wrong Freddy.
Half credit.
Half credit.
Would only have been any good also if it was like when you won with him, you got the Dokken Dream Warriors theme at the end of it.
That's
the thing that's the biggest bummer is that, you know, Robert Englund Freddy is like, mess with you, Wagon. His arms are super long.
The new one, he just kind of slices
you.
Is there a fatality where you get you drown in a waterbed?
No. I hope so.
I'm not doing it.
That would be amazing.
All right, so my finishing move is I can't let the week that the Madden demo drop not talk for a second about Madden. I do also have a build, so we'll be talking about some more about Madden football coming up. My quick first observations from playing with it are that I wonder how they're going to incorporate this dynamic player performance thing. When you pause the game, it shows you how what's going on in the game is affecting the game. I'm not sure how much I want that to affect, but at the same time, it's kind of cool. For instance, in the demo, it is Packers versus Bears, and I was blitzing a ton, and so it showed that Cutler had become trigger happy. But then I'm not sure that I was really seeing any difference in him being trigger happy because I was being able to sack him because he was spending too long in the pocket before throwing the ball. So there's that. There's some cool...
It literally says he's trigger happy.
Yeah, no, so it shows like a guy's iconic picture, and then it shows underneath him his tendencies, and it'll tell you whether or not what you're doing in the game have affected those tendencies. So clearly what it is that key star players have a short list of things that might happen. Like a Clay Matthews, one of them was big hitter, but I hadn't done whatever it needed for Clay Matthews to be a big hitter. I guess because I got most of my slacks with AJ Hawk, so I don't know. But, you know, obviously like pieces that could come together... You're not liking it. You're not feeling
dumb.
It.
It sounds like you could like mess up your players by playing them incorrectly and like damage them.
I don't know. It's weird. And you know,
it sounds arbitrary.
I know it's tough for them year in and year out. I just think that at some point in time, someone's got to come into the Madden team and say, instead of fooling around with features and backs the box items, let's build a better fucking football game.
Did you have the Kinect supported version yet?
All right, there you go, folks. That's the big show for today. Very big thanks out to Oddball, who did our song Fame. It was produced by Nasty Face. And, of course, Ryan, our very own Ryan, who does all of our video, shot and produced the video, which you should check out on YouTube. We'll have a link for that in the show notes. Mr. Jeff Cannata, as always, here from Totally Rad Show every day of the week on Revision 3 or TotallyRadShow.com.
Yes, indeed.
Shane El Shaddai Bettenhausen.
You can follow me on Twitter at ShaneWatch, one word.
Yeah, we should definitely be following that. And then hopefully we'll see you at PAX.
Yeah, I'm 99.9% guaranteed.
Zav, you have a...
You can also follow me on Twitter at XAV.
That's
a three-letter Twitter. That's pretty impressive. I follow you, and you're
back in the day.
Quite entertaining.
I signed up for it.
I also want to mention that Toilet Rat Show is having a live PAX panel as well Friday night, and we're going to need you guys to come because we're opposite Giant Bomb, which is lame. But hopefully,
I'll come.
Please.
I'll come. Dude, of course, I love you guys. I love Giant Bomb too, and I don't know why can't we just. Why can't
I seem
we do,
to be coming down. With
why can't we do? Why can't we do a big like giant totally bomb show?
That's like West Side Story.
Yeah.
Oh, it's. I mean, people fighting.
We're the sharks,
sorry.
Right, guys?
Well, they could dance it
wait,
off.
Wait. We're the sharks, right, guys?
We're the sharks.
You don't want to be sure. The Jets?
No.
All right, folks. See you in the story comments. Until next week, that's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. You've been the same line too. You'll get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I got to do to get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that, I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all, following those are three rings. You know more about me, anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed. But I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart, and you. Always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.